Good morning, everyone. It is Thursday, April 3rd, 2025, and it is 8:17 a.m., and we are calling to order the following board meetings. The annual board meeting of the Austin Affordable Housing Contractors, PFC, the annual board meeting of the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation, the annual board meeting of Austin Pathways, Inc., the annual board meeting of the Austin Affordable PFC, Inc., the annual board meeting of the Austin Blueprint Housing Solutions, Austin board meeting of Equity CLT, the annual board meeting of the Housing Authority of the City of Austin, annual board meeting of Pathways Asset Management, Inc., board meeting of Southwest Housing Compliance Corporation, and last and not least, the annual board meeting of the South Congress PFC. So with that, it is Mr. Gerber, call the roll.
Commissioner Apostola?
Present.
Commissioner Duncan Hall?
Present.
Commissioner Carrington?
Present.
And Commissioner Ritchie?
Present. We have a quorum, so we're officially called to order at 8:17 a.m. on Thursday, April 3rd, 2025.
Pledge of Allegiance?
At this time, we will do the Pledge of Allegiance and ask Commissioner Apostola to lead us.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Go ahead.
Good morning, commissioners. It's with great sadness, of course, that I share with you and the Haka community that our vice chair, Charles Chuck Bailey, passed away on Monday, March 24th. As many of you know, Chuck had been dealing with a series of illnesses over the last several months. Chuck joined the Haka board in January of 2000, and over the past 25 years, he helped to keep us focused on our mission to serve the lowest income families here in Austin. Chuck was involved in government for over 50 years. After receiving his law degree in 1974 from the University of Houston, he served as an assistant criminal district attorney in Lubbock, where he tried close to 100 jury trials in 3 years and was appointed felony chief. In 1978, he moved to Austin to serve as assistant general counsel and then as general counsel at the Texas Department of Public Safety. In 1981, he joined Governor Bill Clemens' legal office as assistant general counsel, where he helped pass portions of the governor's legislative agenda. And after a tour as special assistant for elections for the Texas Secretary of State, he was hired by the legendary state comptroller Bob Bullock, where he served in a number of capacities, including as chief administrative law judge and deputy comptroller for legal affairs and tax policy. In 1993, then Lieutenant Governor Bob Bullock asked Chuck to join him and become general counsel and chief of staff in his office. And while working for the Lieutenant Governor, Chuck worked closely with all of the senators and state leadership on a tremendous number of issues. After leaving the LightGov's office, Chuck maintained his own law practice, and he served on a number of boards, both corporate and nonprofit, including the board of KMFA, Austin's classical music station, and, of course, here at Haka, a position that he loved and where he has most recently served as our vice chair. He was an author. Many of us have wonderful copies of Texas Political Memorabilia that was published by the UT Press back in 2007, and I know he was working on a book on baseball as well. For most of us, we know that Chuck had a near encyclopedic knowledge of Texas government and politics. Legendary Texans such as Ann Richards and Bob Bullock and Kent Hance and A.Z. Taylor Morton and John Sharp and so many others counted on Chuck as a trusted colleague and friend, and they turned to him as a wise counsel and mentor. On a personal note, Chuck was unfailingly kind and supportive of me and the work of our agency. I know all of you know that NIDIA takes the monthly board books to most of you. However, I took some personal privilege and usually took Chuck's book to him, and when I did, he invariably invited me into his home for a visit. I know Charmin was thrilled just had me drop by. Surrounded by a pack of dogs, we would sit in Chuck's study full of books and Texas political and baseball memorabilia, and we would catch up on politics, the agency, our families, and how, in Chuck's opinion, the city, the state, the country, and the world were going to hell in a handbasket. We solved absolutely no problems, but I learned a great deal during those sessions and the occasional lunches that we would have at Matt's El Rancho and at the Austin Club. And at the Austin Club, it was a real treat because everybody knew Chuck's name there. But I learned a great deal during that time, and his coaching and encouragement and mentorship helped so many of us here at HACA to become better leaders and frankly, be just better people. Chuck was an unabashed New Deal Roosevelt Democrat. He believed in government working to make people's lives better. He challenged assumptions. He pushed the staff. He asked hard questions. He took his oversight policymaking responsibilities seriously, and he set a great example for how a commissioner should approach their work. He was deeply loved and respected, I know, by his board colleagues and by the staff, current and present, as well as by so many of our residents. Our sincere condolences go out to Chuck's wife, Charmin, to his children and grandchildren, and to all who loved him. May he rest in peace.
Would you have any other commissioners at this time like to say a word or two?
Good morning. I've had the pleasure of sitting next to Chuck at these meetings for many, many years now. And he was indeed a wonderful person, a wonderful commissioner, a wonderful friend. And I'm glad I could say friend as well. He was a mentor to me when I joined the board, and I have over the years enjoyed so much watching him as a board member, asking, as Mike mentioned, the hard questions. And he always had in mind not only the present but the future for the Housing Authority, and those questions helped put us to zoom on many of those issues. I miss him. That's
I met Chuck about 13 years ago when I came on the board of the Housing Authority, and I also found out that Chuck was on the board of KMFA, which I was on that board too, so I had the pleasure of serving with him in two different capacities. And a couple of things that I think that I enjoyed the most and will miss the most. Having been a state agency employee, Chuck understood what it was like to be at a state agency, to run a state agency, and I really appreciated that. I loved his stories. I loved his Bob Bullock stories, Bob Bullock and Ann Richards, who are characters in Texas government. I never worked with either one of them, but I loved hearing the stories about them. I think the other thing is Chuck would bring up, he would bring up issues that maybe the rest of us wouldn't think about, or he thought about it in a different way than some of us did. And when he would come up with something, I would think, oh, Chuck, really? And I'd kind of roll my eyes, and then I'd say, he's got a real point. So he had the ability to sort of cut through an awful lot of stuff and bring up some points that were really very important for us as we did our business. So I, too, will miss Chuck sitting across the table from him.
I've only known Mr. Bailey for the 5 years I've been commissioner, but I feel very fortunate to have known him. He was a man of dignity and a true Texan, humorous, and always brought up points that needed to be discussed. I admired him, and sitting across from him is going to take a while to get used to, but he was Chuck Bailey, so may he rest in peace. Thank you.
I think of all the board members, I've probably known Chuck the longest. I met Chuck when I went to work for Governor Richards, and he was working for Governor Bullock. And, you know, our bosses didn't always see eye to eye, but we talked to keep a dialogue going between the offices. Mayor Watson, after he appointed me, I'd been on the board for a couple of years, and we had a vacancy come open, and he asked me, he said, what do you need on the board? And as I've reflected on it, I said, we could use another legal mind on there, someone who is somewhat familiar with criminal law, because we're dealing with a lot of issues of one strike, three strikes, you're out, criminal law type of issues, things that I'm just simply not familiar with, and I'm not sure anybody on the board has that background. And I just said, you know, most of all, somebody who's willing to learn, because it is a complicated industry, but also somebody who's with a high moral character and dignity. And sure enough, he appointed Chuck Bailey, and Chuck met all those. Chuck has a vast knowledge of criminal law, criminal procedure. He's tried many criminal cases. He knows government inside and out. He is someone who could work with people from different political philosophies, having worked for Governor Clemens and then working for Bob Bullock. And then he had the most important thing about Chuck is that he always asks very probative questions at the board meetings. Even when he disagreed with us, he was someone who would do so in such a way as to still allow the issues to move forward. And he was, I think the most important thing about Chuck that I remember is, despite having worked for a number of folks, having done all the things he's done and all the things he's accomplished in his life, he had this big compassionate heart, because he always thought about how did this, the decisions we made, impact the residents. And to me, that is a tribute of Chuck Bailey, whose heart is bigger than the state of Texas. And so he will be missed by all of us. We will miss his political acumen. We will miss his compassion. We will miss the probative questions that he always brought to the board meeting to keep us all honest, keep us all on our P's and Q's. And as the proverb says, iron sharpens irons, and Chuck certainly sharpened us and made us more. He enriched our lives with his presence, with his conversation, and he helped us grow both as people, both intellectually and politically. So Chuck will be missed. I always kind of felt like he was a brother, because he and I could talk about all sorts of political stories, because we both work for and have relationships with both Governor Bullock and Governor Richards, and then our lobby careers. So he will be missed sorely. I'll just say this one last thing. It might kind of reminded me of this. When I was president of NARO, the last thing I did was I convened a international symposium on affordable housing here in Austin. And I could have chosen anybody to be the keynote speaker at our dinner, but I chose Chuck. And Mike kept asking me, you know, you could. There are a lot of folks here, but I kept saying, no, you know, I want Chuck, because I thought Chuck could give our international guests, as well as guests from around the country, a true flavor of what it means to be a Texan. All the rich knowledge that he had about Texas, Texas politics, and then just, you know, our whole culture. And so I thought he was the best person to represent Texas among international housing professionals. So to his wife, Charmin, and to his family, we love you. Our prayers are with you. Just like you will miss him, we will miss him as well. And so I pray that the good Lord gives us strength to go through this transition of being without him, but to give us peace of mind to know that he is he's at peace with his Heavenly Father.
Ken Bond put together a quick video of some of Chuck's work here at HACA. And,
thank you.
Mr. Chairman, as we turn to the business of the Housing Authority of the City of Austin, the first order is that we need to have Commissioners Carrington and Commissioners Duncan Hall state their oath of office. So let me give that to each of you. If you would just read it into the record.
Should I start?
Commissioner Carrington, why don't you read yours first, and then Commissioner Duncan Hall.
I, Edwina Carrington, do solemnly swear that I have not directly or indirectly paid, offered, promised to pay, contributed, or promised to contribute any money or thing of value, or promised any public office or employment for the giving or withholding of a vote at the election at which I was elected, or as a reward to secure my appointment or confirmation thereof, and that I will faithfully execute the duties of the Office of Commissioner of the Housing Authority of the City of Austin of the State of Texas, and will do the best of my ability to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution and laws of the United States and of this state. So help me God.
Thank you. Congratulations on your reappointment. Commissioner Duncan Hall?
I, Dr. Tyra Duncan Hall, do solemnly swear that I have not directly or indirectly paid, offered, promised to pay, contributed, or promised to contribute any money or thing of value, or promised any office or employment for the giving or withholding of a vote at the election at which I was elected, or as a reward to secure my appointment or confirmation thereof, and that I will faithfully execute the duties of the Office of Commissioner for the Housing Authority of the City of Austin of the State of Texas, and will do to the best of my ability preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution and laws of the United States and of this state. So help me God.
Thank you. Commissioner Duncan Hall, congratulations again on your reappointment.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, with your permission, we'll turn to public comment. Other than the students from the University of Texas, is there anyone else wishing to make public comment today to the board? Okay. Then let me invite the students from the University of Texas to come forward and take a seat. Glad you're here. Professor Wade, do you want to come forward as well, or are you leaving it just to the students? Okay. Great. Professor Heather Way from the University of Texas Law School is here as well. Great. We're glad to have you. Pull up a microphone. So, commissioners, we've at Chairman Ritchie's direction, we've allotted 15 minutes for the students from UT to do a presentation on some of our tax-exempt properties that they have been studying. You have in front of you two reports that Professor Way shared with me. One deals specifically with HACA, which is going to be the slide presentation that you're going to see today from the law students. And then there's a broader slide deck that we provided to you that is on strengthening public benefits in tax-exempt partnership properties. These tax-exempt partnership properties, or TEPs, as they've been dubbed, are what we enter into within Austin Affordable Housing Corporation. So it's we'll go ahead and mark the time at 8:37, 38, take your 15 minutes, and we look forward to hearing your findings. Welcome, and please introduce yourselves.
Hello, my name is Anna Rose Habein. This is Elizabeth Blackford. We're law students at the University of Texas, and we are working, or have been working on this project for the last two semesters. It's building off of a former report that was done in the fall of 2023 on junk fees and excessive fines and fees in housing generally. And this project has focused on researching these tax-exempt partnership properties and across Travis County, and really looking into ways that we can make them serve the public best.
Oh,
thank you.
Okay, so starting very briefly with what is a tax-exempt partnership property, or a TEP for short. It is an apartment complex that is owned by a local governmental entity in partnership with private developers or investors, and it receives a 100% property tax exemption. So in this project, our goals specifically were to identify the total number of TEPs in Travis County and their impact on the property tax base, In addition to that, we sought to understand what public benefits local government entities require in exchange for the tax break that these TEPs receive, and identify opportunities for more uniform local policies. And very briefly, we felt it was helpful to actually chart out the organizational structure. So throughout our presentation, we will be referring to HACA, and when we refer to HACA, that is everything underneath HACA, basically. So the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation and South Congress Public Facilities Corporation, and the TEPs fall underneath these two organizations.
So first, just to give a brief overview of the summary of our key findings. So first, we evaluated the estimated tax break from these exemptions and looked at appraised values and found that $101 million a year is used towards or given exempted from these entity or from these TEPs. And however, we found that still there are problematic policies for some low-income renters across some of these TEPs, and especially we found that there are inconsistent policies across the TEPs, which allow developers to sort of shop around and look for partnerships in ways that undermine local government and that require or want to build these stronger public benefits using these tax exemptions. And some of the policies that we looked into and found were that some of the rents were unaffordable, as well as hidden and excessive fees. And then there were also some high eviction filing rates. And we wanted to note that this isn't this is across the TEPs in Austin and Travis County as a whole, just ranges and inconsistent practices from one TEP to the other. And then lastly, we also found that there were access barriers for low-income tenants and voucher holders. And one recommendation we had was to create this robust set of uniform policies across TEPs, across the entities that manage TEPs and partner on TEPs across Travis County, to really help address these issues in a broad way that allows these exemptions to still function and gather developers. So our areas of research, as I mentioned, we did look into the tax base as well as the rents and fees, any access barriers, as well as eviction mitigation policies and the filing rates across TEPs. And just starting with that tax base, as I mentioned, the estimated annual tax loss is $101 million and growing as there are many more developments in the pipeline. This accounts for 131 apartment complexes at nearly 30,000 housing units. And so really a great opportunity to bring affordable housing to Travis County through these complexes. And kind of breaking it down by entity, we have HACA's breakdown really as a leader in this area, having the majority, kind of the largest partner for TEPs in Travis County, with 67 properties, which is a little over half or nearly half, and $62 million in these tax exemptions, which is a little over half of that total tax exemption.
Turning now to unaffordable rents and junk fees, we identified through our research that there was a lack of affordable rents as well as several hidden and problematic fees at many TEPs. Specifically looking at the rent policies at TEPs, we looked at whether the entities set rent limits at 30% or less of the required area median income level. And the majority of entities that we looked at did do this. Turning next to whether or not this was adjusted for family size, at HACA specifically, we found that this varied from property to property. And lastly, whether there was a utility allowance included in rent limits, the majority of properties did not have this provision. And when we are discussing what policies, we are looking specifically at legal documents that were provided to the clinic, as well as any written policies adopted by the entity. This is not including any informal policies that would not be reflected on these charts, because that has the tendency to vary from property to property.
When you say varies by property, can you give an example just so to make clear for what you mean by that variation?
Yes. So some properties or some property management may have a policy at only that TEP or at TEPs that they manage to for the adjusting AMI level based on family size, for example. They may have a policy to do this if there is a certain property manager or at certain TEPs, but it is not a policy across the board for all TEPs under HACA. And I won't get, for the sake of time, too in the weeds on this slide. However, this just presents an example of the importance of adjusting area median income limits based on family size. So the AMI level for one person at 60% would be a income limit of $52,920, whereas a family of four would be $75,600. That's the bottom level. So if a unit does not adjust for family size, they could be renting out to one individual at 90% AMI level rather than the 60% target AMI level. And turning now to fee policies at TEPs, we looked at whether mandatory recurring fees were counted towards rent limits. And again, the majority of entities that we looked at did not count these mandatory recurring fees towards rent limits, save for Strategic Housing Finance Corporation. And in addition to this, none of the entities that we looked at required upfront disclosure of fees. And the majority of entities also did not bar eviction of tenants for late payment or non-payment of fees, nor did they have a cap on late fees. And just a quick example of why this is important and how it impacts the affordability of these units, taking an example of a one-bedroom affordable rent set at 60% of the area median income, the rent limit for that property, for that unit, would be $1,323 for a one-person household. Once you add in utilities and other fees, that would push the total monthly cost of that unit up to $1,598, making it more than 30%, closer to 36% of the individual's income going towards housing each month. And you may be asking, where did we get this $150 monthly recurring fee number? All of the numbers that we pulled for this presentation are numbers that we came across in our research. And using a HACA TEP as an example, specifically the Aspect Apartments, on the right, you can see the total monthly rent breakdown. And all of the fees on the side total up to $121. And just to briefly touch on one of the fees, the lease lock fee, that we were informed during a phone call with the leasing office, is a mandatory security deposit alternative that is required for tenants with poor credit, and they are charged this, and additionally a $500 non-refundable upfront fee. Ana Rose will talk a bit more about this in the next section regarding the access barriers that these types of fees specifically present.
And so turning to access barriers, first, what do we mean by access barriers? Specifically, we looked at two areas, barriers to voucher holders specifically, as well as barriers to low-income tenants more generally. So under barriers to voucher holders, there are three main areas, which include just not prohibiting voucher discrimination, which allows a property to not accept voucher holders for the fact that they have a voucher, as well as minimum income policies that work to exclude voucher holders by exceeding 2.5 times the voucher holder's share of the rent. So still basically applying a blanket policy to all income holders, regardless of whether the housing authority is paying that voucher's, the majority of that voucher's share. And then finally, a lack of affirmative marketing policies for voucher holders, such as advertising voucher acceptance on the property's website so that voucher holders know and can take advantage and attend, go to these properties. And so turning first to these voucher holder policies at TEPS, we looked at across the board. So first, the HACA does bar discrimination for voucher holders, at least based across the legal documents from two of the most recent TEPS deals under Chapter 392. We want to note that HACA doesn't have a written policy governing this policy area. However, we've noticed that you have covered these bases in your most recent deals, and we want to commend that. Additionally, though, we do notice that these minimum income policies can vary across property and can work to exclude voucher holders even where they're technically mandated to be accepted, as well as a lack of affirmative marketing for these voucher holders. And so this kind of plays out when we look at the actual numbers of voucher holders at the non-LIHTC properties of these TEPs. Specifically non-LIHTC because LIHTC already requires acceptance of voucher holders and has other protections such as the minimum income protections. And so as you can see across the board at TEPS, voucher numbers are extremely low. Again, Housing Authority of City of Austin has this highest number, which is only 2%. But we wanted to note that the range of vouchers per TEP property is very broad. So some properties do a great job and have 24 voucher holders at these properties, but some don't, which is why we're advocating for a more uniform set of policies across the board to really bring these numbers up across all properties and bring up the average number of voucher holders to reduce that return rate of vouchers. Yes, we were only looking at the most recent fall 2024 acquisitions. And so then the access barriers for low-income tenants at TEPS, so these are requiring affirmative marketing of affordable units in general, just affordability on the website, really showing people that the property is affordable rather than tucking that information away. In addition, restricting application costs, just capping these so that they don't become excessive. We saw a great range in application fees, and as well as restricting non-refundable security deposits. And so what that non-refundable security deposit is when someone is asked to pay that additional upfront fee based on credit or based on some other factor, and it's not refundable even if they have excellent behavior in the unit. So right now, Housing Authority of City of Austin does not restrict in any of those areas. And just from a look at some of the properties, for example, we looked at the Aspect and Austin City Lights, and these are examples of some of those high upfront fees that can act as barriers to low-income tenants who don't have the capacity to pay, for example, a $210 administrative fee along with a $65 application fee just to look at an apartment. And then similarly, we looked at this non-refundable fee. So for tenants at the Bridge at Monarch Bluffs, they are assessed a non-refundable $600 opportunity fee at move-in if they don't have any credit history, don't have a credit score. There are several other things in different sections, such as no rental history or evictions on their record. And this is also true at several other properties managed by or under the Bridge at Davenport and Bridge at Arella Lakeline.
Turning now to eviction rates at TEPS in Travis County. In 2024, TEPS overall had higher eviction filings than the overall county rate. So the overall county rate for all rental properties was about 4.5%, whereas at TEPS it was about 5.7%. And now looking at this same number broken down by entity, there is a pretty significant amount of variance between the entities, with HACA being right in the middle of the county average and the TEP average at 5%. However, it looks a bit different when we look at the top 10 evictors in Travis County, where Haka properties represent 4 of the top 10 evictors, and the bridge at Loyola specifically having an eviction filing rate of 31% in 2024. And looking at this more specifically, the TEPs with the 10 highest eviction filing rates accounted for 38% of all TEP eviction filings in 2024. And just a reminder, in Travis County, there are 131 TEPs currently as of the date of our research. And looking at the eviction mitigation policies that we identified, a lack of comprehensive eviction mitigation policies, such as a 30-day notice requirement for termination or non-renewal, good cause requirement for non-renewal, a right to cure lease violations before an eviction can be filed, a lack of policies requiring creation of an eviction mitigation plan, or requirements to negotiate reasonable payment plans and accept rental assistance. In fact, of the entities that we looked at, only Austin Housing Finance Corporation did provide these protections under their ROTA program. And the impact of the ROTA program on eviction filing rates is notable, as TEPs with ROTA eviction protections had a 3.6% filing rate, which is lower than the overall county average, whereas TEPs without these protections had a 5.9% filing rate.
And so turning to the ultimate goal, these recommendations on ways that we can serve, that TEPs can serve the tax base more efficiently and affordable, achieve its affordable housing goals. So first, we advocate for a uniform baseline policy to ensure that public benefits are aligned with this large tax break and that these low-income renters have access to affordable and stable housing. And this policy, this uniform policy, should cover several areas, including the affordable rents and these excessive and hidden fees, removing these barriers for low-income renters and voucher holders, creating this public benefit threshold, and working to mitigate evictions to really achieve these ultimate policy goals of these TEPs and of these partnerships. And so we really have this robust set of protections that we're going to get into, but I'll mostly give an overview of them. So first, ensuring that rents are actually affordable, trying to include these utility allowances and rent limits, and adjusting the AMI by restrictions by family size to make sure that small units are affordable to individuals rather than families only trying to cram into these housing complexes without otherwise making it affordable for them. As far as regulating these excessive fees, these junk fees, so what we mean by that is mandatory recurring fees that are often not disclosed upfront in advertisements or in the application. So we advocate that these disclosure requirements are required throughout the process, really making clear to tenants before they pay these upfront admin fees what the true cost of rent and housing will be each month. As well as banning these non-refundable security deposit alternatives, such as that lease lock, that kind of work to make things not affordable at the end of the day for these tenants, as well as mid-lease changes in fees and rent. We also advocate for removing these barriers for voucher holders and low-income tenants and applicants by barring source of income discrimination, including but not limited to voucher holders, and barring these minimum income requirements that sort of exclude voucher holders, to bring up this voucher holder numbers across the board. And then ultimately for these low-income tenants generally, also working to cap these application fees at the out-of-pocket costs, which is something that LIHTC programs already do. And so several LIHTC properties actually already do this as a function of other tax credits that they receive. And really also working to make sure that any non-refundable monthly security deposit alternatives are charged as optional, as required by state law, and barring these special non-refundable fees that are just upfront fees, and instead opting for true returnable, refundable security deposits. And then we advocate for this public benefit threshold. So basically, before approving a TEPT, conduct an assessment to ensure that market rents that the rents at the property will fall below this market rent, and that the public and low-income renters in Travis County will receive this benefit back from these tax exemptions. Just requiring that the total projected rental discounts equal at least a certain percentage of the value of the estimated abated taxes. And then we also advocate for these eviction mitigation policies. And so the first step of that is adopting this ROTA lease addendum, which is already used by a couple different Travis County TEPs in different ways, required by Austin's Housing Finance Corporation, and also given bonus points through Strategic Housing Finance Corporation. And so these include things like a 10-day right to cure, which the city of Austin has worked to pass a local ordinance regarding, and really looking at requiring good cause for non-renewal and written notice explaining why, just to ensure that evictions are only occurring when necessary and that all the steps have been taken to see if we can get these tenants to and properties to work together to avoid taking this like ultimate step. And then as well, kind of in the same vein, is adopting eviction mitigation plans at these TEPs, which would require these multiple points of interaction between the landlord and tenant to encourage working together to find a solution, such as payment plans, providing infrastructure. And we did include a slide on the importance of eviction mitigation just for your own information, as well as an example of the ROTA program. And again, just here is our summary of key findings, just to have up and really advocate for this uniform set of policies across the board. And at this time, we do invite any questions that y'all may have.
There's a lot here.
Yeah.
and I know you all are continuing to refine this, and you're going to be presenting perhaps to some other boards as well, and then the final report will come out. So I think for staff, and we've had a preview of it, and this slide deck is a little different than it's a combination of the two slide decks. So maybe we'll hold on to this one as well if you guys don't mind, but wait for the full report to come out, and then it'll give us a chance to maybe read a little more fully, into what the recommendations are, but I think there's some interesting things here. Ron Kowal, who heads up Austin Affordable, and I had a chance, commissioners, to review, this over the last few days. There's a need for some strengthening of policies and some work that we can do. You know, eviction is a terrible thing that we, we're all about second chance housing, and we want to try to keep as many residents safely housed as we can. There's also some, hard realities of just operating real estate in the city that are challenging. So I think, commissioners, with your indulgence, we would like to have staff spend some more time working through this and then be able to come back to you all with some specific potential policy changes and other work based off of that, an analysis that we do. It'll just take a little bit more time. But congratulations on your work and sharing some really important results with us.
Yeah, thanks for bringing this to our attention. We're always looking to improve, and the staff will take this under advisement and look to determine whether there are changes that need to be made, can be made, and over what period of time they should be made. So thanks to my fellow commissioners. I just got summoned to come back to the Capitol, so I got to leave. But you still have a quorum, so you can continue to operate.
Thank you all. Thank you very much for your work on this.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Appreciate you having us here.
And you all are graduating in about a month's time, so congratulations on that. You're no longer law students. You'll be real lawyers. It looks like you're off to a great start. Best of luck to you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Professor White. Anything you want to add? Thank you. Is there anyone else wishing to make public comment? Ask Lupe Garcia to come forward and to address the board and provide the citywide advisory board report.
Good morning, everybody. Should I start now?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Do we need to sit on the chair?
Tara, are you chair? Aren't you chair?
Mary?
Oh, okay.
Chair?
All right. What do you say?
Tell him to go ahead.
To give a second.
Okay. Good morning.
The time is coming.
And you can proceed.
Thank you. I'm Lupe Garcia. I call the citywide, president of the citywide board, call the meeting to order March 11, 2025 at 10:33. Veronica Perez Castillo, vice president, read the minutes from the last citywide board meeting. Alice Madrid, president of Gaston, provided the treasurer for the citywide board balance is $1,060. Presentation was Shauna Stewart, community director of South Properties, provided information about Inspire inspections at Salinas on April the 2nd. Michael Gerber, president and CEO, called in from Washington, D.C. since he was attending a conference to represent Austin, Texas, and the HACA. The new presidential administration and federal agencies had updates on changes to the housing industry, and we are working hard to preserve affordable housing and residence programs. Austin Pathway updates. Lilani Villegas, Senior Director of Community Development, the HACA Resident Scholarship, is accepting applications and encourages residents to apply for all the scholarships opportunities such as NAMA, FADA, and NLH. Information available through the HACA website. Murphy Rowland, Workforce Development Manager, Capital Ideas, hosting a warehouse logistic certification provided by the Capital Air Food Bank. Another program is the Auxiliary Certification Program for 8 weeks. Brahma Lee, bringing home health home manager. Welcome, Jacqueline.
Miyasaki.
The newest community health worker. She's previously worked with the Austin Public Health. Crethan Grego, Digital Inclusion. This is her last citywide board meeting. Thank the residents for the wonderful 10 years journey with HACA. Jeanette Chavez will be leading digital inclusion program along with Murphy Rowland. Property updates. Santa Rita announced the spring break activities, including creating posters about what you're leaving behind at Santa Rita, followed by a community parade. Alice Madrid, president of the Gaston, shared that the Austin First Church is hosting a spring luncheon on March 21st. Meeting adjourned. Margie Bettis, president of Bolden Oaks, made a motion to adjourn the meeting. Norma Munoz, president of Meadowbrook, seconded the motion, and meeting adjourned at 11:37.
Just a little bit of stuff going on.
Just a little bit.
So the Women's Mind at Ease conference
yes.
for My Moms is happening on
April 25th.
We're very excited.
It's on the roll. It's
a lot of good speakers, including the mayor.
The mayor, Mr. Gerber. Who's Mr. Gerber? Mr. Gerber. Yeah, I'm really excited. We've had tremendous pour down. We had a lot of donations. And I thank you for y'all's part for donating also. But this year has been very, very, very great. Y'all are going to be, if you show up, you're going to be amazed about what some of the IMAs have done in this year.
We're very excited.
We're so excited. But I do want to ask you something. I have an IMAMS that has tremendous, just amazing. And we're going to get her a very special gift. And that gift, when we wanted you to present that gift to the IMAMS at the conference.
Sure, when let's talk afterwards.
Yeah, so we'll do that. But otherwise, everything's ready, y'all. Everything's covered. Everything's tremendously, we finished everything yesterday. So it's like done. Done deals. So I'm so proud of my IMAMS and my team. And want to thank Lilani for bugging her all the time and Veronica. Veronica Bajardo came and helped yesterday. She saw what we were doing. But it's amazing, y'all. And I really want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for all y'all's support. Thank you so much.
And Lupe, you did a wonderful training with Leilani where we had Renee Smith from National Pro come. So all the resident leaders, presidents, vice presidents, and officers met at the Austin Apartment Association and spent 6 hours,
yeah.
7 hours
mm-hmm.
on a training that was really pretty exhaustive about the oversight role that they play, the important role they play in helping to develop programs and to be ambassadors. And can you say anything you'd want to say about that program?
It was really amazing to know that we have so many community leaders that do so much and behind the scenes, y'all. That I've right now I'm working with 3 presidents. They want to be able to extend and do community also, like have their own food pantry. Like, what do we do? Where do we connect? What is it that new? They want new vendors. So right now, I think that this meeting took a lot in because they learned so much about how to come together. I've always said we're 18 properties, but we want community, and I feel very strong that we have very good leaders in the Haka community. And I was approached by someone. I was at a meeting in a convention, and of course somebody knows you, who doesn't know Mr. Gilbert, but they said we hear a lot about Haka. We hear that Haka lets their residents become leaders. And I said, you're so right. He does. They do. And we are the leaders of this community. So it took an impact a lot, and I was very, very proud to be there. So, yeah, but that meeting that Renee does, that training, I thought it was good. I even told Lilani, I said, maybe next time we can have like half of the, instead of all 18 properties, have half. Mm-hmm. So that, because this more advanced. So I would something separate besides waiting for Renee to come in 2 years or a year.
Yeah. That's a great idea. Yeah.
So
split it up and just keep doing a refresh.
Refreshing and refreshing. So that, that way that other new president comes in, already has those steps, and teaching them how to, it was so simple about how, right now I'm teaching them how to do the agenda, how to make sure the minutes are not from 2 months ago. And so that's one of the hardest part that they were having to deal with. So that's what I'm doing right now. So it's amazing. But I thank you for giving me the opportunity. I really do.
So we'll be sure to invite all commissioners on April 24th to the
25th
to the Women's Mind at Ease mm-hmm. conference. Get there if you really like, get there early and help. Come on the 24th, and then we have the Mayfest, which is happening
right.
May 23rd. So
yes.
big conference months for
yeah.
us, where we bring residents together uh-huh. with lots of services.
A lot of services, yeah. So it's
thank
amazing.
You, Lupe.
You're so welcome, and I truly appreciate again, Haka.
Leilani, anything you want to share?
Just wanted to say, just like y'all got sworn in, that was the event also during the Austin Apartment Association.
Yeah.
We swore in all of our resident council officers for the next 3 years, so we're looking forward to their leadership this year. That's all I wanted to add. Thank you.
Thank you.
Resident council meeting.
Okay, take care. Thanks.
Commissioners, Madam Acting Chair, with your permission, we'll turn to item one, which is on the HACA agenda. There's going to be a lot of agendas today and a lot of votes today as we work through each of these board agendas. As you know, we opened up all 10 of our HACA, AHC, and then all the subsidiaries. So there'll be some bearing with us, and I thank you for your indulgence. So item number one on the HACA agenda is the approval of the board minutes summary for the board meeting held on February 20th, 2025. Carrington moves.
Second.
Duncan Hall seconds. Is there any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? And the motion passes by a vote of 3-0. The second vote is on a presentation, discussion, and possible action regarding Resolution 2884, election of new officers for the Housing Authority of the City of Austin. With your indulgence, let me tell you how we've approached the selection of new officers across all 10 of these board agendas that we have today. You have in front of you this, if you would provide that to everyone. Oh, great. Now you do. As you know, we've tried to work it out in sort of logical groupings. Based on feedback from the board, we've tried to take a stab at what we heard the board say. However, know that this is exclusively the board's prerogative to decide who is chair, vice chair, second vice chair, and so forth. That's a prerogative that is exclusively yours, and staff is completely neutral on it. However, based on the conversations we've had with you all, there's three big groupings. So if you look at HACA, the vote you'll be taking in just a few minutes has a slate here, if you will. And then there are three big groupings of work that we do. One is under Austin Affordable Housing Corporation, which is in the light blue. And we have the same slate of officers for all of the work that gets done under Austin Affordable Housing Corporation. So Austin Affordable Contractors PFC, Austin Affordable PFC, Equity CLT, and South Congress PFC all feed into Austin Affordable Housing. So we've proposed the same slate for each of those five entities. Southwest Housing Compliance Corporation and Blueprint is a second separate body of work. We've proposed the same slate for those two. Likewise, Austin Pathways is a third body of work that we have, and so we've proposed a third slate of candidates. Please keep in mind that this is, you know, temporary. We would presume that the mayor will appoint a new board commissioner some point in the next few months, and then we'll come back and we'll revisit and get to do this all over again. So this is the slate as sort of recommended, but we'll have to go through again each board agenda to vote on these candidates and to put people in place. So for the presentation, discussion, and possible action regarding Resolution 2884, the election of new officers for the Housing Authority of the City of Austin, is there a motion and selection of individuals to be selected? And only board commissioners can state these folks. So if one of you would like to indicate, you know, that your support, the order, that would be very helpful. So I'm nominating. Nominate Mr. Ritchie as chair, Mr. Commissioner Duncan Hall as vice chair. If that's what you'd wish.
Slate. So I recommend this slate of officers for the Austin Housing Authority of the City of Austin.
Great.
And subsidiary corporations.
Great. Excellent. Carrington moves. We need Duncan Hall to second because you're chair. Commissioner Duncan Hall? You'll accept being vice chair?
Yes.
Yeah. Is there any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Congratulations to the officers. So we have Chairman Ritchie, Vice Chair Duncan Hall, Second Vice Chair Apostolo, and Commissioner Carrington continues in her service. So now that we have a new vice chair, Commissioner Duncan Hall will take the seat as the new vice chair of the Housing Authority of the City of Austin and get to walk us through these remaining nine agendas. Congratulations.
I thought this was going to be
instituted the next meeting.
No, we get to start today. Should we pause for 2 minutes to get coffee?
That would be lovely. Thank you.
We'll pause for 2 minutes to 5 minutes to.
5 minutes.
Yep. 5 minutes. Madam Chair, we will reconvene at 9:32. With your concurrence, we're going to try to go through each of the subsidiaries. And other boards as quickly as we can. We'll knock a couple out, and then we'll come back and do an issue. So just to break it up, because otherwise we'll get awfully monotonous.
And as a reminder, we have already approved the HACA list of board members.
Correct.
So and chairs. Yeah.
So, Madam Chair, we'll now go to Southwest Housing Compliance Corporation. It's already been called to order.
Okay.
Certification of quorum has been provided. There's no public comment. Our consent agenda is item number one, approval of the board minutes summary for the board meeting held on June 20th, 2024. Is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
Carrington moves. Apostola seconds. Is there any further discussion?
All right. The motion is approved and seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Motion carries.
Madam Chair, item number two, so by a vote 3-0, that motion carries. Item number two is presentation, discussion, and possible action regarding Resolution 97, the election of new officers for Southwest Housing Compliance Corporation. Is there a motion to select and a slate of officers to be presented?
I second. And shall I read the officers of Southwest Housing Compliance Corporation for the record?
Please.
Mary
Apostolo is the chair. Carl Ritchie, Vice Chair, Tyra Duncan Hall, Second Vice Chair, and Edwin Harrington, Director.
Okay. All those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Commissioners, there's no need for an executive session. There's no reports today, and we can adjourn. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Carrington moves. Apostola seconds.
Okay. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Okay, opposed? Motion carries for adjournment.
And we're adjourned at 9:35. So we'll go back now to Blueprint, which is a subsidiary of Blueprint Housing Solutions, or BHS, in your board book. That's a subsidiary of SHCC, and staff is encouraging the same slate of board members. So this board meeting has already been called to order. A certification of quorum has been provided. There's no public communication. Consent agenda under item number one is approval of the board minutes summary for the board meeting held on March 21st, 2024.
So
Carrington moves. Apostola seconds.
All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries.
Item number two is a presentation, discussion, and possible action regarding Resolution 17, election of new officers for Blueprint Housing Solutions.
Okay.
Those officers are Chairperson Mary Apostolo, Vice Chair Carl Ritchie, Second Vice Chair Tyra Duncan Hall, and Edwina Carrington, Director.
And you're making that motion?
I am making that motion, yes.
Second.
Apostola seconds.
All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
There's no need for an executive session. There are no reports today, and I believe staff recommends a motion to adjourn.
Okay.
So. Apostola
moved
moves.
And seconded.
Carrington seconds.
Okay. Motion to adjourn the Blueprint Resolution, Blueprint Housing Solutions Committee. Please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
And we're adjourned at 9:36. Commissioners, we'll go back to the main HACA agenda. I'm not to couple those out. We'll go back to the main HACA agenda, and we'll pick up item number three, which is, or do we need to do that under AHC first?
We need to do AHC first.
Doesn't matter.
Nope.
Okay. Let's do it under Austin Affordable.
Oh.
So why don't we go ahead and take up the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation?
Okay.
Ron votes for that. Ron, why don't you and Bill come forward and Suzanne. Yep. So, Commissioners, under Austin Affordable Housing Corporation, Chair Carrington.
I'm getting there.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Austin Affordable Housing Corporation, the meeting has been called to order. There is a there's a certification of a quorum. Is there any public communication?
No.
No public communication. And the consent agenda, there are two items on the consent agenda. The first is approval of the meetings, board minutes of the meeting held on February the 20th, 2025.
I move approval of the minutes.
I second.
Any discussion? If not, the meeting, the minutes of the February the 20th meeting are approved. The second item is the election of new officers for the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation. And those officers, the proposed officers, are Edwina Carrington, chairperson, Mary Apostolo, vice chair, Carl Ritchie, second vice chair, and Dr. Tyron Dockin Hall is a director. Do I hear a motion that these commissioners?
I move approval.
I second it.
All the officers.
Okay. Tyra makes a motion. Mary seconds. Any discussion? If not, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. That motion passes. Then the action item, one of the action items for Austin Affordable Housing Corporation, is Resolution 00268. To take the actions necessary for the Prospect Heights development in Austin. So, Bill and Ann, come on down.
Show us pictures.
Pardon me?
Are you showing us pictures?
I'm going to show you some pictures.
We have some really pretty pictures.
I do. Good morning, Commissioners, staff, and guests. My name is Ann Gass. I'm the Director of Strategic Housing Initiatives for the Housing Authority of the City of Austin. Today we are requesting action to allow for the development of Prospect Heights. Prospect Heights is a homeownership community that is being developed in partnership with Austin Habitat for Humanity. It's, as you can see here, part of the larger Rosewood development. As with many of our projects, HACA will own the land and ground lease it to an LLC owned by AAHC. And we will create and manage a condo regime for four duplex-style townhomes. The area in the blue box here at the bottom right is the homeownership site. And this is, it's a technical drawing, but I wanted to, this is the best that I had that was current, and I wanted to show you, just so you could understand, we're going to have six buildings, 12 units, so they'll be duplex-style, and at the bottom is Paquito Street. Then we have a couple of driveways to get back to the driveways, the parking areas, and the little private side yards for each of the individual homes. As with any Habitat project, the site is being built by volunteers. If you drive by on any Tuesday, Wednesday, or Saturday, you will see a whole bunch of folks out there in vests and hats, pounding away at these buildings. They're coming along swimmingly. As you can see, one thing that struck me about as I walked through the houses the other day is these volunteers are encouraged to leave messages for the families. And the families will probably never see them because they will be behind drywall. But all these good feelings, you can see, God bless this home and family with peace, joy, and love. That's all over these homes, just a lovely, sentiment that's, that shows the love these volunteers have in building these homes. We had a little rock star crew out there. You probably recognize some of these faces. We had some HACA team members out there last week volunteering on behalf of an FSS family, a HACA FSS family who's working with Habitat to purchase a home. We're hoping to do a larger volunteer opportunity with a second build season in the fall. Daniel Reese, who is the tall guy in the middle, is also sitting behind me. Daniel is working with our HACA residents to qualify them for these homeownership opportunities. Our MDA with Habitat allows us to recruit first, and we have already secured seven families, qualified seven families, for 7 of the 12 homes, and Daniel has quite a few more in the pipeline. And we hope to fill all 12 homes with HACA families. Here's a rendering. This was also in your board books, along with the cell sheets, if you're interested in floor plans. But this is the rendering of what the community will look like. It's really shaping up. It's going to be beautiful. We're very, very excited to have a grand opening here. And this is just a little detail for you. Again, 12 homes and 6 buildings, 11 three-bedroom, two-bath homes, selling for $156,600, 1 four-bedroom, two-bath home, selling for $182,000. Again, 7 families have qualified for purchase, and the closings will occur in 2026.
Are these market rate prices or?
No, they are well below market rate. Well below market rate.
Considerably so?
Considerably so.
What percentage?
I don't know. I can get that for you, but considerably so. I don't know if Ron would have any. Yeah.
A four-bedroom home in this area would be $700,000, $800,000?
Okay. And we've had a market study done, Commissioner Duncan Hall. I could get that information for you, but it's okay. Significantly a fraction of market.
I knew it had to be, but I was just curious, as I usually am. Right?
Well, and that's the difference we make because we're donating the land. We're,
in that
destination, right. There's no land cost. Habitat has a model that we're excited to work with. These folks will still have a mortgage, but the mortgage will be far less.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. The target is 60-80% of AMI. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Okay. And a couple of questions. Is there one particular lender or mortgage company that the families go through, or is there a group of them that we refer families to?
Let me let Daniel speak to that because he could speak in more specifics. Here.
Yeah. Here, let me just
say your name and title.
Yeah, absolutely. So my name is Daniel Ruiz. I serve as a HACA Homeownership Program Coordinator and Family Opportunity Manager. Big title. but regarding the lenders, so Habitat has a variety of lenders, but the two that are currently working with Prospect Heights are UFCU and Guardian Mortgage.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, so the families, whenever they go through the process, they can pick and choose. A majority, I would say, I'd probably say all of them at this point have decided to go through UFCU just because they usually all bank with the credit union.
Interest rate, is it a market interest rate?
Typically it is, it goes based off the market, but as a result of the lenders, they do are able to offer, I think yesterday they said about 2 points less. So obviously that changes every day, but yesterday I believe it was at the rate that they were providing was a 4.875.
Mm-hmm. And these homes are being offered, do I remember reading that they're being offered to families that were residents at Rosewood? Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yes, and at the moment, you know, of course, Rosewood families, but currently available to any current or past HACA family as well.
I'm sorry. So Rosewood families, yes, but then what was the second part of what you said?
Homes also available to current or past HACA families.
Okay.
Including voucher families.
So the larger,
correct.
The larger HACA family, not just specifically Rosewood.
Yeah. Rosewood folks got first dibs,
mm-hmm.
but knowing that we wouldn't have enough folks who would qualify, we then went to the broader PBRA properties and then broader to all the Housing Choice Voucher recipients. So anyone who's a HACA resident or client is eligible. And, of course, there's some really challenging aspects of homeownership, ensuring the ongoing ability to pay the mortgage,
mm-hmm.
Having that stability. And that's what Daniel's really working a lot through, is to get folks across that finish line.
Mm-hmm.
Typical eligibility requirements for someone who's applying to own a home, typical lender requirements for?
So if I can work with maybe three requirements, it would be below 80% MFI or AMI. At the same time, although that's a strict requirement, there also is a minimum requirement as well that'll vary per household. Income.
Give an example of the minimum requirement.
So typically, given the fact that these mortgages, we estimate it based off interest rate, credit score. And, of course, the variety between the three and the four-bedroom, we estimate the homes to be between $1,450 to $1,700 per month. So usually that would make the family need to – it would in order for the family to qualify and have enough wiggle room to take care of other expenses, we're looking at a minimum requirement of about $45,000 per year. So minimum 45 and then the 80% depending on the household size.
And that's using the rule of thumb of 30% of your income goes for housing?
I believe we're using 35% for the front-end ratio. Yes, ma'am. So we have income and then credit score, minimum credit score of 620, and then that debt-to-income as well.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's really exciting stuff, mm-hmm. and we're, you know, and of course this was the project that, you know, Secretary Todman helped us lift the wall up for the first wall at Prospect Heights. So it's very, very exciting. Today, the action that we need the board to take is a little bit different and more into the sort of the realities of sort of the real estate, if you will. So, Ann, you want to? I'll let you continue.
Oh, that was.
That's it.
Yeah.
Great.
That's the presentation.
Great. So we're asking you all to.
Thunder.
Yeah.
Sure. Oh, did you steal my thunder a little bit? That's fine. No, steal away.
No, Daniel's the thunder because he's really the one who's working, you know, with those residents. In fact, Daniel, let me ask you a quick question. Can you share with the board without saying names? Can you share like the story of one or two of the people that you've qualified for the program? Give a quick just. 1 minute overview.
Choosing one family. So I've had the pleasure of, you know, we've gotten about 1,000 inquiries or 1,000 families that have submitted an interest form. And so, you know, getting to know each one of their stories. I'd like to, maybe it was the family whose writing was on the wall. You know, she came to us one day and was very hesitant to start the home ownership process just because she was saying, you know, I meet the income requirement, but my credit score and my debts are I need some help. And after an initial conversation, you know, it did seem that way. But, you know, we were able to connect the family to Habitat for Humanity. And they, of course, took a much in-depth analysis. And it turned out that, you know, she was actually able to qualify right then and there. So a lot of the times with our families, it's, you know, the stigma of home ownership. Credit, I would say, is probably one of the more difficult areas to kind of tackle. But a lot of it is just, hey, let's take a look at it. And it's not even a matter of, you know, like a bad score from a large trend or a large history of bad, credit practices. Is just really one or two items that are affecting them, and then once we're able to address those, you see the score go up. So I think for that particular family, you know,
how large is the family?
For that particular family, they're a household of three, so single mom and two children.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Good.
Thank you. Yeah. So in today's action, we're asking you all to approve a resolution that will authorize HACA to authorize the AHC to execute any and all documents or take any other action that's necessary or desirable to facilitate the acquisition, development, and operation of Prospect Heights here in Austin and to ground lease it from the Housing Authority of the City of Austin to AAHC Prospect Heights LLC, which is a subsidiary with limited liability company through AAHC, and would also cause AAHC and or the owner to execute any further documentation necessary or desirable to consummate these transactions. So we're ground leasing this to the partnership, and we'll continue to own the land, but it'll be used for this purpose, and we're super excited about it. Council, anything you want to add to it?
That's it. This one has a little bit of a convoluted structure, given that they're purchasing the condo units, but you're correct. You will continue to own the dirt for a long, long time, and these folks will have the housing there. The reason this is coming to you now is because previously, I think the undertakings had been pursuant to kind of residual authority under some of the other Rosewood resolutions more generally. This is the first Prospect Heights specific authorizations, and that's why we're here asking for these, just to make sure the board specifically approves this.
So we would ask for a motion
to approve. Okay, a motion to approve resolution number 00268.
So move.
Okay, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Question, you moved, and
Seconded. So Chair Carrington is presiding.
Oh, that's right.
I will second. You move to approve.
So Apostola moves. Duncan Hall seconds.
Any more discussion?
No.
Hearing none. then Resolution 00268 is approved. Then the next item under Austin Affordable Housing Corporation is item number 4, and this is Resolution 00269, and this relates to the bridge at Kinsey, which is the development. This consists of existing multifamily housing units in Austin to be ground leased from the Housing Authority of the City of Austin, cause AAHC subsidiary limited partnership to own the development, cause the owner to enter into acquisition and development financing, and cause AAHC or the owner to execute any and other such documents to consummate the transaction. With that, Mr. Kowal.
Thank you, Madam Chair. 3201, Jorge Esperanza Way. Good morning, Commissioners, staff. Thank you. Happy to be here for you presenting this deal. Resolution 269 is an opportunity that HACA has been presented to partner again with Belveron Corporation. This is called the Kinsey Apartments, which is centered in the heart of the domain. If you look at the screen up there, you can see that where it's located. If you're familiar with the domain, which I'm sure most of you are, the main park of the domain is right catty corner to it. You'll see the park right there where the green dot is, and the Kinsey is right across the street. It's on that main boulevard of Esperanza Crossing. It consists of 279 units. It was built in 2014. It sits on about almost 3 acres, 2.89 acres. For as long as I've been, the domain has been up, and I lived, you can see where I used to live right across the street on Burnett Road there. We've always tried to get some affordable housing into the domain, and there's very little, if none, that we know of. And we've been unsuccessful until this opportunity has arisen for us.
And how did it come about?
So it was the sellers. It's managed by a company called Heitman Real Estate Investment Corporation, but they manage all the investments for the Los Angeles City Pension Fund. And so this is owned by them, and they were divesting some assets across their portfolio, and this was one of them. It did go on the market about a year ago. I can't remember the exact date. We did bid on it then, and we were not awarded. They gave it to someone else that failed to close. So then it came back through their broker to our partner at Belveron and said, "Would you still be interested in doing this?" So we jumped back in and had the opportunity to look
at
it again.
Did you get a reduction in price?
We did. We actually did get a reduction in price. We are still in due diligence, but we're very close to moving forward. We're really pleased with the ability or the opportunity to bring some really good affordability into the domain. As you know, there's so much retail and service sector and hospitality needed there. It's your standard property in terms of, you know, all the amenities, the pools and the cabanas and you've seen them all, but it's very nicely done. It's got some very nice big spacious courtyards. It's very heavily occupied. Like I said, it's right in the center of the heart of the domain, walkable to the soccer field, just across the street from the rail station at Kramer and Burnett Road, right there by the rail station that's currently there. Great transportation, good bus, big bus services all around, obviously right off of MOPAC, and a very, very high opportunity area. The domain is the second highest rent per square foot in the city of Austin next to downtown. So there's some really, really good opportunity here to do some really good things for the service sector in and around the domain and the employment sector. There's a lot of high-tech companies, Apple and Intel and all those that are all operating in and around the domain. As I mentioned, there's 279 units, 34 studios or efficiencies, 157 one-bedroom, one-baths, 74 two-bedroom, two baths, and 14 three-bedroom, two baths. As we have, are still in our process of trying to decipher how the what affordability exists on the property right now, based on what we've been able to audit, we've audited about 156 files of the 279. The rest of them are incomplete in terms of income. But we're averaging about 10% of the units are at the affordable levels at 60 and 80. So there's a long way to go to get us to the, you know, below 50% with 10% of the units at 60 and 40% of the units at 80% AMI. The good thing is the reductions in rent and the possibility to bring in immediate affordability there as we turn over units and start leasing the vacants to the affordable community is going to be, you know, that's going to be number one priority. Obviously, they'll have first priority. Those units will be held, you know, for affordable units so we can get this turned around really quickly. But it's a very high income, very high opportunity area, a very, very high dollar amounts of rent. And so there's some substantial cuts in the rents to get them to 60 and 80, especially on the twos and three bedrooms.
Question.
Mm-hmm.
So 10% of the units are going to be at 60% or 80%?
At 60%.
60%. Which would, if my math is correct, 27 units in total?
It would be 27 units across the portfolio at 60 and then 40% or the.
So they're not all going to be studio apartments?
No,
the,
ma'am.
Okay.
Several things we do. It's equally distributed amongst the portfolio. Mm-hmm. You know, so every unit size has the same level of affordability and the same number of affordability based on that percentage. So there'll be, you know, two of the three bedrooms will be at 60, and so forth, 10% of each one of those. So it's equally distributed. It will also be calculated by number of households and number of people in the units, which we do regularly. We don't put one person in a two bedroom and charge them for four. I mean, it's based on the number of occupancy, and that's been a standard practice of ours forever. So it'll be a true rent reduction. Just to give you an example, real quickly, the three bedroom units that they have there are renting for $3,916 and $4,021. At 60% AMI, we'll be dropping those rents to $1,965. And at 80%, it drops it down to $2,621. So it's almost it's very close to, you know, about a $1,500 deduction, almost $2,000 on the 60% units. And I do say that these are the minimum requirements. Mm-hmm. As we, you know, as we go down the affordability, as we operate this through the years, we've seen across our portfolios that we've created a natural occurring more affordability as AMIs go up. AMIs, the existing tenants drop into a lower AMI, creating more affordability, and we manage those market rents to where they're sustainable for our residents, so they're not going to get displaced. That's a very common practice we do. But I will say this is a very, very high rent district, and it will take us, you know, as vacancies turn, you know, it'll take us, you know, we're looking at, based on historic, probably 20 units a month that are turning. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it'll take us a good 9 months probably to get into this affordability range to where we're 100% affordable.
Well, that's better than I thought. I always thought maybe 1 to 3 years.
No, we set our goal at getting these done within the first year of the acquisition, and we've been able to be successful, especially now. It's 97% occupied, so it's very heavily trafficked. But like I said, the turnover is you know, about 15 to 20 units a month, and those will be set aside for affordable units. And I can promise you, once we advertise and get it out to the area that these are affordable, mm-hmm. we should have a very robust pool of people wanting to come in there. It's a beautiful asset. We're real proud of it.
And you're going to make sure that you're advertising to the voucher holders?
Yes, ma'am.
Because you haven't been doing that in the past.
We have. but, yes.
Well, we
Well, no, we have.
That was sarcasm.
Yeah,
let's call it what it was.
Okay. A couple of questions, Ron. You mentioned that typically within a year you can meet the requirements.
Yes, ma'am.
For affordability. Is there anything in the documents that say you must meet the affordability requirements by a certain period of time?
Currently, no.
From the get-go, the percentages of units that are reserved for those income bands are in place. So it's a matter of the turnover for them to achieve that. But the requirements are there from day one, if that makes sense.
Yeah, but do they have 9 months, 6 months, 18 months to actually meet those requirements? That was my question.
I see. That varies. Some transactions it's built in.
Some do. Right. The lender may require that, you know, we hit a 2-year period. But there's nothing statutory. It's okay. Kind of a gray area.
Any of the deed restriction or any of the regulatory agreements or anything like that.
As units turn, they're required to go to those affordable tenants.
Correct.
And this is a Fannie permanent loan.
This will be a Fannie loan. We anticipated a rate around 5.5. As I'm watching the 10-year drop dramatically this morning, we may get a little bit more favorable rate. It'll be a 35-year amortization. The purchase price was $83,515,000. I think when we were looking at this a year ago, we lost it at somewhere around $87 million. So we got a little bit of a discount on the price, on the purchase price there. Our friends at Bellwether are doing the loan on this one. It will be called the Bridge at the Kinsey in the Domain. So we're working on that, and I assure you that it will be marketed to our voucher holders as well, and they will not be turned down. They will be accepted. Meeting our criteria.
If they meet the requirements.
Yes.
One more question, Ron. So for whatever reason, the original winners of this either couldn't close or walked or whatever, then did the owners come straight to Austin Affordable, or did we have to negotiate with them, or sort of how did that work?
They came to Belveron through their broker after the deal failed. They worked on it for about 90 days with the company that purchased it, and at once that fell out, they regrouped. They went back to their broker and said, "What do we do now?" And he basically told them, "I told you in the first time to take Belveron and Austin Affordable, and now I'm telling you again, go back to Belveron and Austin Affordable." And they did, and we took about 60 days to negotiate. Maybe a little longer, and reengage with them, and they've been really good sellers now. They learned their lesson, but again, I caution too. I mean, we're still in due diligence. There's still some items that we're looking through, and we're still doing some inspections. But I feel really good about the project, and you know, we've spent a lot of time on it the first time go around as well. But anyway, it'll give us our first presence in the heart of the Domain, which is really exciting. Especially in one of the highest opportunity areas of rent in the city of Austin, and only going to get more expensive.
And word gets around the rents that are being charged, which are considerably lower than what's being charged now. How will that be handled by existing tenants?
So we will look at the renewals, and we will work within those AMIs that are already there, and if they qualify and they fall within the affordable program, the max we can charge them is whatever the AMI rent says we can charge them. So if they are an affordable, if they qualify in the affordable category, then their rents could be reduced to meet that requirement. If there's complications or problems with their incomes, they would just move into the market rent side. But we have adjusted units before, where people have come in and we've dropped rents down. And so that's a very strong possibility. And that's part of the due diligence, which we're having trouble with, because a lot of the files don't have incomes. And why they don't, it's a long, I don't understand how you, but anyway, so it's currently Graystar, and they have what's called this, you know, I think they use a stated income approach. Just tell me how much you make, and you know, here's an application. We go with that. They do have high levels of delinquencies, which we noticed right away. So as leases renew, we'll bring people in, recertify them, and see where they fall. And again, there's a lot of high incomes, I can assure you of that there. So I don't know how many of those people, regardless of their files or not, are going to qualify. I think it's going to be reaching out to the marketing team, going around the area and getting the word out. That's going to really draw in the affordability. And I expect to really, once the word gets out to the retail and to the hospitality in that area, and they start talking to each other, you're going to get a lot of people run over. It's a beautiful asset. I can't wait to show it to you. You know, if we pursue it and close it.
We would ask for approval of Resolution 269.
Do I hear a motion? Mary moves.
Second.
Tara seconds. Any more discussion? If not, then a vote for the approval of Resolution 00269, which is the bridge at Kinsey. All
aye.
In favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Discussion? All right, motion passes.
Thank you.
All right, congratulations, Ron.
Excited. Keep up the good work. There's no need for an executive session. I would just note under reports, Mr. Kowal and Ms. Schwartner and I will work with you, Madam Chair, to report back to the board on the findings of the University of Texas and come back with some policy suggestions and some thoughts about that analysis, and to make sure that we're synced up again in general. I think the things that were presented this morning point to the positive work that we do, but that there's always work to do to tighten up policies and to make sure that we're working hard to better lives of those that we're charged with serving. So we'll come back and do that.
Thank you. As I have told you, Mr. Gerber, what I'm particularly interested in is the items that were in that report. What are we doing? And somehow they missed it when they put the report together. What are we not doing that we need to be doing? And then let's look at putting some policies in place to address those weaknesses or deficiencies.
Will this information be available by our next meeting?
No. Just truthfully, we've got the Texas State Legislative Session that we're working through, and it's going to take a little time to process this.
Wouldn't that information be useful to the legislative session?
No.
All right. We will be informed as to when the information will be available.
Yes, we'll visit
late summer, early fall, perhaps.
Oh, no, I think over the summer, or early summer. Yeah, early summer. It's just going to take a little time to piece together. And we work with management partners. IHC works through a variety of management companies, AAMP being the largest, and that would be the largest for this portfolio that they analyze. And we need to just work with them to that effect. And just make sure that we're synced up on what they're doing, and make sure that they have good policies and others have consistent policies on the things that this board cares about. And so that may mean also bringing to you all some policy ideas that would be expected of our management partners. But we need to do that in a way that also doesn't bust open the agreements that we've got that we're held to, both in the ownership of the property, the partnerships, and the financing of it. So there's a lot of it's just going to take some time to walk through it with Ron and Bill and Suzanne. We'll get there, but there's just more stuff to look at. They looked at some very specific things. We want to go through that report and look at those specific things. I think we want to also look at what can we do to address those things and get to a clear, consistent policy. Like one of the things that concerned me is there wasn't a consistent policy on how to affirmatively
advance the renting to voucher holders.
That was the issue we were talking about earlier.
We absolutely rent to voucher holders. So we need to be very specific about what that policy looks like. And if you want to be in business with us, you do this. And this is what that looks like. So we've got to work through it to just make sure that we know what this looks like. And then we want to bring that policy to the board
and
consult with you all.
A question of clarification there. Ron, in the report that you provide us every month, don't you list for each property the number of voucher holders?
Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am, and it's also on your maps that you get every month as well. There's a separate column that shows the number of vouchers in each property.
And we've seen a significant increase.
We have, but keep in mind we're not issuing vouchers. So the only vouchers we have are those that are moving around on the street, and of course we can't steer them into that's a violation of fair housing. So, and if you go to our websites, we have a page called Essential Housing Piece that shows all the affordable rents on every property's website that breaks down those rents by affordability and by AMIs. We are doing some things on the website that weren't really told you. The other thing I wanted to clarify is the two properties that they highlighted the most, which was the Aspect and Austin City Lights, are neither one of those are managed by AMP. The Aspect is managed by CAF, which is a management company out of Dallas, and Austin City Lights, if you remember our friend from Michigan, we talked about the Detroit Lions and Super Bowl, they came in. They have their own internal management company, which does a fantastic job, and they have hired AMP to help them meet the affordability requirements, make sure they're auditing the files correctly, doing all those things right, and so they're now as like a consultant to them to shore some of those things up. So, in all fairness to AMP, the two properties, and there are some discrepencies there, which we'll talk about later. I just wanted to clarify that those were not AMP properties.
Give us a chance to work through.
Yeah.
And one of the things, if this is correct, one of the things that was surprising to me was not adjusting for HUD income limits. And we don't want to talk about it now, but that is one of the things I really
we need to work through it and perhaps have a group within subcommittee work to sit down and work in.
May I serve on that?
You chair it.
We'd love that. I look forward to responding.
Some need for fact finding, right?
Yes. I think yes. Commissioner Carrington and Commissioner Apostolo in your roles as chair and vice chair, I think you'd be great. It would be a great subcommittee. With that said, I think we're done with items under AHC. I would ask for a motion to adjourn.
Ask for a motion to adjourn Austin Affordable Housing Corporation.
Second.
Okay, Tyra makes the motion. Mary seconds. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Then the meeting of the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation is closed at – oh, we have to have a motion to close it, don't we?
You did.
We just did that. Okay, 10:15.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
So we're closed at 10:15. Let's pick up the just sort of work through a couple of the other items under that AAC body of work. So if you go to Austin Affordable Contractors PFC or AAC PFC, we'll turn to that agenda next. It's already been called to order. There's a certification of the quorum. There's no public communication. The first item is the approval of the board minutes for the board meeting held on October 17th, 2024. Is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
Commissioner Duncan Hall moves to approve. Apostolo moves to approve. Duncan Hall seconds. Is there any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
And any opposed? And the motion passes. We'll go to number two, which is resolution 0003, election of new officers for the Austin Affordable Contractors PFC. Is there a motion of a slate of?
And those proposed officers are Edwina Carrington is chair, Mary Apostolo is vice chair, Carl Ritchie is second vice chair, and Dr. Tyra Duncan Hall as director.
Would Commissioner Apostolo or Duncan Hall make the motion?
Second.
Apostolo moves. Duncan Hall seconds. All in favor say, is there any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
And the motion carries. Congratulations. There's no executive session, no reports, and is there a motion to adjourn? Apostolo moves to adjourn.
Second.
Duncan Hall seconds. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
And we are adjourned at 10:17. We'll now turn to Austin Affordable PFC.
So may I continue, Mr. Gerber?
Oh, yes, ma'am. If you want to, leave, go
sure.
ahead, please.
The meeting's been called to order. Quorum has been certified. There is no public communication. The consent agenda, the first item, is approval of the board minutes of December the 18th, 2024. Do I hear a motion?
So moved.
Mary motions. Tyra seconds. Any discussion? If not, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. The second item is the election of new officers for the Austin Affordable PFC, and this is Resolution 00121. And those proposed officers are?
Which one is
that? Edwina Carrington is chair. Mary Apostolo is vice chair. Carl Ritchie, second vice chair. And Dr. Tyra Duncan Hall is director. Do I hear a motion to approve these officers?
So moved.
Second.
Discussion? If not, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Motion passes, and that's Resolution 00121. No need for an executive session. So we will close the meeting of the Austin Affordable PFC.
Need a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Duncan Hall moves. Apostola seconds.
Okay.
All in favor say aye.
Say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? And that's at 10:18.
Commissioners, yep. We'll turn to Equity CLT. And Chair Carrington, do you want to lead that one?
Meeting has been called to order. Quorum has been certified. There's no public communication. The consent agenda, the first item, is approving the minutes of March 21, 2024.
So
Mary motions, Tyra seconds. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, the motion passes. The next item is the approval or the election of officers, and this is 00014, and this is officers for the Community Land Trust. Those proposed officers are Edwina Carrington, chairperson, Mary Apostolo, vice chair, Carl Ritchie, second vice chair, and Dr. Tyra Duncan Hall as director. Do I hear a motion that these?
I move approval of the list.
Commissioner Mary seconds, Tyra first. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, that motion passes, and that's the election of officers at 00014. No need for an executive session, and do I hear a motion that the meeting is adjourned?
I so move.
Mary motions, Kyra seconds, and so that's at 10:20.
All in favor?
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay.
10:20.
Then the meeting adjourned at 10:20.
And the last one in the string is South Congress PFC.
SC
PFC right after this. Commissioner Carrington? Chair Carrington?
I'm getting there. Sorry. Call to order. The meeting has been called to order. What quorum has been certified. There is no public communication. The first consent item is the approval of the minutes of October the 17th, 2024. We'll hear a motion.
I so move.
Mary moves. Tyra seconds. Any discussion? Okay. Approval. Vote for approval.
Aye.
Okay. Any opposed? Second item is the election of officers for South Congress PFC, and this is Resolution 00020. And those proposed officers are Edwina Carrington, chairperson, Mary Apostolo, vice chair, Carl Ritchie, second vice chairperson, and Dr. Tyra Duncan Hall as director. Do I hear a motion to approve resolution 00020?
I so move.
Mary moves.
Second.
Tyra seconds. Any more discussion? If not, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. That motion passes. That resolution passes. No need for an executive session. And do I hear a motion that we close the meeting for the South Congress PFC? Mary moves. Tyra seconds. Any discussion? Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. South Congress PFC is adjourned at 10:22.
Commissioners, we'll turn back to the main HACA agenda. We'll turn to action item number 3, which is resolution number 2885 by the Board of the Commissioners of the Housing Authority of the City of Austin to take the following actions with regard to Prospect Heights in Austin, Texas. 1, lease the development site to the owner of the development, and 2, such other actions necessary or convenient to carry out this resolution. This is just a re-ratification of the very set of issues you heard in the Austin Affordable Housing Agenda that you just approved. We'd ask for a motion to approve.
I so move.
Apostola moves.
Second.
Carrington seconds.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Madam Chair, item number 4 is resolution 2886 by the Board of Commissioners of the Housing Authority of the City of Austin to take the following actions with regard to the bridge at Kenzie in Austin, Texas. 1, to acquire the site of the development, and 2, lease the development site to the owner of the development, and 3, such other actions necessary or convenient to carry out this resolution. Again, this is a re-ratification of what you at the HACA agenda level of what you just discussed at the AHC on the AHC agenda.
All right, all those in favor of resolution number 02886, please signify.
Absolutely moves. Carrington seconds.
Second. All those in favor of resolution 02886, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion carries.
Commissioners, with your indulgence, we're going to go down to item number 6, which is a discussion and adoption of resolution 2888, awarding a 1-year contract for agency-wide trash recycling and composting services to Waste Management of Texas. Michael and Crystal, come on up. Dr. Crystal James is going to present, and Michael Roth is going to join her. This is the team that is fresh off of an incredible inspection yesterday that got us a score of 91.7. at Selena. Very excited about it. And this inspection yesterday wasn't just an inspection. It was an inspection that came complete with a HUD quality control audit on top of it. So they were playing by the book the whole way through, and we still got that score, which is very impressive. So congratulations.
Thank you.
Turning to Waste and Trash Matters. Go ahead.
Good morning, Commissioner, staff, and guests. My name is Dr. Crystal James. I serve as the Director of Pathways Asset Management for the Housing Authority.
And Michael Roth, Vice President of Pathways Asset Management.
Okay. We're here to discuss the adoption and resolution of Agenda Item 02888, awarding 1-year contract for agency-wide trash recycling and compost services to Waste Management of Texas. The total cost of the contract is $473,418.24, which is roughly about a 5% increase from the previous contract year. This process did go through this invitation for bid, which originally was sent on February 2nd and again on February 8th. Advertised through Austin American Statesman, HACA website, and the Housing Authority Marketplace. 12 invitations were downloaded. However, only 2 agencies took advantage of that opportunity, and only 1 was received on time. Staff's recommendation is that we accept the 1 bid that was received on time with our current vendor, which is Waste Management of Texas, based on previous year's performance and cost. We find their cost increase to be reasonable, but they're also looking to help us enforce the city ordinance for multifamily recycling and compost requirements.
Any discussion?
Any thoughts about why you only had 1 response?
Honestly, we the fact that there were 12 vendors that actually did look at the bid and the information, and only two of them chose to even submit. When looking at those other entities, many of them were from out of state. The only two that actually submitted anything were the two that were local within the state of Texas.
Okay. Either business is good or...
There's been a lot of consolidation in the business in recent years, and having the ability to dump the amount of trash that that our properties generate is no small thing. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of inconsistencies in sort of how, you can go out to one of our properties on a Monday, and find that there's a massive amount of trash. There's a lot of there's some degree of unpredictability to it. You can then return after you've emptied that trash and find the same amount of trash there on Wednesday. So there's just an unpredictability to it, and I think a lot of companies factor that lack of predictability into their bid, mm-hmm. and they'll just charge more because they're going to assume greater risk. Mm-hmm. Waste Management knows us. We've partnered with them over many years, and while there are some things that we continue to work with them on, we'd love to see their prices flatten just a little bit. We think that they've been very responsive partners, responsible partners, and partners, and they've worked with us. And the recycling ordinance is going to throw us all.
Have we done a multi-year contract with them? I noticed this one is only for 1 year. Is there a reason for that and not a multi-year?
So we are able to renew this contract for 5 years. Okay. So we can do auto renewal on this one for 5 years.
Okay.
At the same rate, or is there a certain percentage increase each year?
That gets negotiated. And ultimately, if they're coming and proposing something that's not acceptable, then we go back out for bid at that point in time.
Yeah.
We don't have to accept it automatically.
Okay, if there's no further discussion, I'll entertain a motion to approve resolution number 02888.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion carries.
Madam Chair, let's take on item number 7, which is presentation discussion.
I just want to say thank you.
Thanks, Crystal. Thanks, Monty. Item number 7 is presentation, discussion, and possible action regarding resolution 2889 by the Board of Commissioners of the Housing Authority of the City of Austin, authorizing the authority to terminate the annual contributions contract and complete the transition fully to project-based rental assistance. And why don't you present the quick version of it?
Ann Gass, Director of Strategic Housing Initiatives for the Housing Authority of the City of Austin. Good afternoon again, or good morning again. I don't have pretty pictures with this one. This is the last step in the process of our RAD conversion to terminate the public housing annual contributions contract. It's a step that's required by HUD, and so per the requirements of the HUD notice, we are putting a resolution forward to the board today, certifying that all actions required by the notice and HUD as part of the RAD program have been taken. It's a long list, and just to just explain the process, the executive team, particularly Barbara Chen, James Teasdale, who manage a lot of the financial aspects of it, have reviewed the requirements of the notice to ensure that we are in compliance with closing out grants, closing out all the funding streams, closing out all the property that we own under public housing, and all that goes into that as part of the RAD conversion. We've confirmed that that's been done. So and Coates Rose has reviewed it. They have prepared the resolution for you today. Once you all approve the resolution, Coates Rose will prepare a legal opinion, and all of that will be submitted as a package to HUD to formally terminate the ACC. So this is just a procedural step to get that moving along.
It does not affect the ACC that we have in place with our Housing Choice Voucher.
Correct.
Voucher programs.
That correct.
Do you want to repeat that exactly what you said again?
Sure. It does not affect the annual contributions contract, which is vital, that we have with our assisted housing and rental assistance programs. So the Housing Choice Voucher Program, VASH, Mainstream, everything that comes through that ACC, that's very much intact. And it's one of the few things that actually is distinct about public housing authorities. Public housing authorities have annual contributions contracts. That's also vital because it gives us standing in a variety of ways, including the standing to operate a project-based contract administration program like we have through Southwest Housing Compliance. So we did clear this with Orlando Cabrera as well to make sure that there was nothing that was going to weaken our position just because we're getting out of this ACC in the public housing program because we don't administer public housing any longer. And everyone was, all of our attorneys were comfortable with it.
Okay. Do we have a name change that signifies this momentous moment?
No. But when we did make the conversion to Austin Pathways and Pathways Asset Management, that's the biggest embodiment and name change, if you will. We got out of public housing and we operate like a, you know, we manage this real estate for low income people in a more market driven way. So, and that transition's obviously been happening over the last 7 years, 8 years under Ann's leadership.
Okay.
So it's a big moment for Ann to say goodbye to fully to the public housing program.
Congratulations.
Yes. Forest, yeah. And we would ask for your approval of Resolution 2889.
All in favor.
Carrington moves. Apostola seconds.
All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. The motion carries.
Thank you.
Congratulations,
Ann.
Let's pick up the last two items that we need to go. We have three more things to go. We'll pick up the last two agendas, which is we'll turn to Austin Pathways first. And under the Austin Pathways agenda, AP.
Okay, hold on.
We've been called to order. A quorum has been certified. There's no public communication. We're asking for approval of the board minutes from the board meeting held on March 21st, 2024. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Carrington moves and Apostola seconds.
All in favor, please signify saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries.
Item number two is Resolution 000009, election of new officers for Austin Pathways. And is there a motion and a suggestion of the slate of officers to be selected?
So moved.
Mr. Carrington, would you read in the officers that you're suggesting?
Dr. Tyra Duncan Hall, Chairperson, Mary Apostolo, Vice Chair, Edwina Carrington, Second Vice Chair, Carl Ritchie, Director.
So Carrington moves and Apostolo seconds.
Yes. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Is there any further? There's no other items to come before the board. There's no need for an executive session. We would ask for a motion to adjourn.
So move.
Carrington moves. Apostola seconds. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed. And we're adjourned at 10:35. Okay. We'll pick up the last one, which is Pathways Asset Management, or PAMI, P-A-M-I. This will be the last of these. And thank you all for your forbearance.
All right.
There is the agenda. We've been called to order. Quorum's been certified. There's no public communication. We're asking for approval of the board minutes summary for the board meeting held on March 21st, 2024. Is there a motion to approve?
I so move.
Apostola moves.
Second.
Carrington seconds.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Item number two is resolution number six, election of new officers for Pathways Asset Management, Inc., or PAMI.
Those proposed officers are Dr. Tyra Duncan Hall as chairperson, Mary Apostolo, vice chairperson, Edwina Carrington, second vice chairperson, and Carl Ritchie, director.
Okay. All in favor?
So Carrington moves. Apostolo seconds.
Yes. And now all in favor of the resolution 00006. I think I added a couple zeros. Let me try again. 00006. All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Second.
Opposed?
Yeah.
Motion carries.
Commissioners, no need for an executive session, and there are no staff reports today. We ask for a motion to adjourn.
So move.
Apostola moves. Carrington seconds.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
We're adjourned at 10:36. So now, Commissioners, we will return back to the last item on the agenda for HACA. This is the annual operating budget. This is a big one. Do we want to take a quick break? Stretch?
Yes. Break.
Yes.
Okay. And Barbara is going to load up the slides, and we'll be ready to go. Great.
We want to cover the budget well. It's important.
I'm not sure that we're going to be back from Colorado.
Okay. So I
appreciate that. No, you have not missed it. And I've put TAP on the calendar, but we haven't exactly figured out when we're coming home. I'd like to go because I've missed it for like the last 3 years. And I miss it. I mean, I see a lot of people that I see once a year.
Yeah.
And a lot of our partners. A lot of them. Where's Sylvia today?
She, because her daughter getting married this morning.
Ooh.
So she's doing a bunch of weddings.
Exciting.
Yeah.
Where's the wedding?
In Lakeway, I think, at Bernard's
house. Does she live out in that area?
No, she lives in
has been a long time since I've looked at this. Yes, I do. Yeah, I have lunch with her. Like, she and Sandy call me up and we have lunch for everybody's birthday. They have lunch for my birthday, we have lunch for Bruce's birthday, and for Sandy's birthday. She's doing fine. She lives in Marlboro. Well, she lives in Sun City.
Oh, she moved to
Sun City.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she likes it. A lot of activities, and she's still painting.
Is she?
Yeah, she is.
I have a picture of her. I have one that she's doing.
She looks good. I mean, she's doing fine.
So you signed that one for Chuck? That book?
Got to figure out what to say.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, Chuck, really? And then it was like, oh man, you're right on it. Right on it.
Yeah, tell Brad.
Okay, I'll take that title off.
Would you guys like to take a tour of the upstairs and see what the construction is?
Sure.
So afterwards, after this is over, we'll see.
No,
we'll do it after the...
Because Minnie's asked for about 40 times.
Yes, ma'am, if you finish that, we'll do that. Finish that.
I've gotten past your job.
See, I'm serious about this. Oh. No kidding.
Hope it works for you. Yes. Yeah. Oh, you will. You know, I think you said it best during the thing. Just saying, you're the best. Anyway.
And I'll miss the stories.
Yep.
I will really miss the stories.
Yes.
And I think we all will. Okay. Nitty, you ready?
Yes.
Barbara, let's do it. So, commissioners, we're reconvened at 10:43. We're going to turn to the last item, which is item number 5, a presentation discussion and possible action regarding resolution 2887, the operating budget for fiscal year April 1st, 2025 to March 31st, 2026. And so we would turn over to Barbara to walk us through the budget.
Sure.
And feel free to interrupt or ask questions along the way.
Good morning, commissioners, Mr. Gerber and the staff. My name is Barbara Chen, CFO of the Housing Authority of the City of Austin. I just want to put it out the first. I want to say that I'm going to make my presentation as short as possible to allow you to have more times for you if you have any questions. I understand the budget. It's over 40 pages. There's lots of information there. I hope that you have a lot of questions for us. No. So I just want to make my presentation as short as possible. All right. I want to point out first that is that due to the different fiscal year, so our red, the PBRA properties, the budget, the operating budget was approved by this board back in October 2024. So here today we are presenting and asking you for your approval. It's for those programs and the properties that we operate under the different fiscal year. The fiscal year ends as March 31st every year. Here we are presenting and asking your approval is for our fiscal year 2026 operating budget for all the programs and the AHC properties, the A property, the management company managing it for us. Okay, so... That's started. This is a summary that's basically on your first page in the budget in the resolution that you can see. This is the I always like to go to the very bottom that the 2026 operating budget, the proposed budget. We right now we project to have a $13,458,598 surplus. Okay, and it's pretty about the consistent as the prior year and the, no. So I'm going to go back a little bit detail about the total revenue. The total revenue is $784,379. Too many numbers. I'm sorry. I apologize.
And which is, what's your title?
I'm sorry.
Our what?
I'm nervous. How about that? Okay. That which is a Hi, little Barbara. Bit increase of the not a little, a lot of increase from the prior year's budget is increased by over $73 million from last year's approved budget, mainly because of the increase in our housing assistance payment. The increase is that one item, the one revenue, is about $71.8 million increase, mainly due to our SHCC PPRA property, the Texas and the Arkansas, due to the higher rent and the higher leasing of unit. And also, this one also including our assistant housing managing the HUD secondary program, housing choice voucher, and plus we got a small grant from the city. So our assistant housing, assistant housing department, that total the HUD increase is about over $10 million, which including that's because of we are going to have, we budgeted 222 new project-based vouchers that the board approved passed over the past few years, that they are going to start leasing up in the 2026 fiscal year. So that's the biggest, increase because of that 222 new project-based vouchers now going to start leasing up in the during the year. Project-based, the increase in 2020, increase on top of what we already lease up. Right now, we have a 394. I'm sorry, I missed one number. So plus this 222, we anticipate that they already informed us the construction now is almost complete or already completed. They are starting leasing since now. April, starting the first month will be April. Okay, the last one property is going in this year, it will be our Rosewood. We board approved the 50 project-based vouchers for our Rosewood development. Okay, so overall 222 units, and plus we also receive new increment, new ACC from HUD for our, like our FAB, FYI, is forced use to independence. So the most current one that is just kind of starting as April 1st. So that overall, like I pointed out, the overall increase is the $71 million in HUB revenue. And the total operating expenses, excluding the transfer out is mainly that we budgeted $504,744. That's transfer out from our SHCC surplus to provide the operating funding for our the PBI property for their calendar year 2026 operation. Other than that transfer out, the total proposed operating expenses is going to be $770,338,437. Again, the increase mainly because of the $71.8 million increase in the HUB expenses. Okay, so that's the kind of way up level summary for our operating revenue and operating expenses and surplus that we propose. We are asking your approval for our fiscal year 2026 operating budget, which doesn't include our capital expenses. Okay, any questions so far?
Barbara?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. On the housing assistance payments,
yes.
It went from 652 to 724. You say increases due to higher leased up units,
yes,
for Southwest Housing and assisted housing.
Yes.
So the amount of the housing assistance payments is determined by HUD, how much we get in the HAP payments. Are these the HAP payments?
Yes and no, because the SHCC, because under ACC, we have to lease, we can only lease up to based on our ACC number of units. Right. But the cost for our SHCC program is kind of, I put it simple, in a simple way, it's a reimbursable. It means that how much the housing assistance payment to the landlord HUD will reimburse us for the same amount. If we spend $10 million, HUD will give us $10 million.
Right.
Okay, we can request $10 million. For the SHCC, yes, that's monthly we settle, we reconcile with HUD. Okay, so that's SHCC, which is over $500,000 just in our program. That's that $50 million a month for the SHCC. But for our assistant housing choice voucher program,
right,
our assistant housing program, it's a little bit different. The thumb rule is that the current year, the assistant housing budget is always based on HUD, how HUD fund us based. It's also kind of reimbursable, but there are different way to ask for the money. Let me put it this way. So HUD, every year, the beginning of the calendar year, they will assess, if not determined, and the amount of our budget authority, they call budget authority for the calendar year, like for 2025. So they are going to say the 2025 is in the budget authority, approved the budget authority. It's based on what we spent the last year in calendar year 2024. We reported to HUD every month now. So HUD, based on what we submitted, we reported how much we spent in 2024. They say, this is your funding. So I'm going to make it very simple. We spent $84 million in 2024. So current budget is there for 2025 is only $84 million. Preliminary approved the budget. But during the year, there's some change, that two major factors. One is like our PPV. PPV, we are going to have this 222 PPV units, right? We know and when the PPV was approved, not just the board approved, HUD also approved it, because we also had need to send it to HUD. They are aware of it, okay? So this 222, using this as an example, this 222 units, okay, they are going to start leasing up during this fiscal year. We did not pay a penny. We did not spend a penny last year. So definitely on the preliminary budget, we are not going to receive any penny. So that's another process. We had to go ask HUD. They call it set aside, show forward, the term. That's the term they use. We had to go to HUD and say, hey, HUD, you approved this 3 years ago, 2 years ago for this additional 222 project-based vouchers that we are going to start to pay the landlord. So we are asking you to reimburse, to provide the funding for us to pay this. That's the process we have to do. So that's why I say two part. If the continue from last year, it's determined the very beginning of the year, and it's always based on what we spend and what our budget authority. But the new increment, the new PBV, that's something we have to reach out to HUD, say, to let them know we have this new expenses, new housing assistance payment, which was not included in the last year. This for us this year, for our section assistant housing, like I say, almost over $9 million, about $9 million. That's the reason why. Because that's 222 project-based voucher. Also, we also receive new increments. Every year, they will provide us new increments for our VASH program, for our first use to independent, our FAR program, our stability program.
Every year we receive new increment. Sometimes the like stability is 44 units. This FY, the forced use to independent, 52 units starting this month. It's starting this month. But this is a month that we just start this month. We did not spend any money last year, but we are going to start this 50 this forced use to independence program, the 52 that we are going to pay. The staff are already, because when HUD notified us the additional 52, the FYI program, they let us know about 6 months ago. We already know. So we are staff already prepared working on it, because those are special purpose program. They are all referred from some other independent agency, like a VA office, like the other low-income family homeless program, those type of things. So this year, we also are going to incur quite a lot of new lease of unit because of new increment. And that's something they approve it. Then when we started, we don't know how much we are going to spend because we have not leased that. So we don't know. So that's why I say assistant housing, two type of calculation. One is carryover, based on the prior calendar year, this year, that any new lease of unit, new expenses, then we go to her, say, but we have this new expenses. We are asking you, we provide all the information. When we have all the information, we also have to report that on a monthly basis to HUD. Then they will assess, they will evaluate, review, and then they will release the fund to us. I hope I answered the question.
So ordinarily that would be 100% reimbursement.
HUD payment is supposed to be 100% reimbursed. Yes, but not admin fee, the management fee. That's, we have to manage that based on what we earn. But HUB expenses, yes, has been since I've been with Housing Authority over 20 years.
Over the last couple of 3 years, probably more than longer than that, I thought I remembered that we weren't getting 100%, say in our voucher program,
mm-hmm.
that we would get funding, say, at about 80% or 82%, mm-hmm. or, you know, but it wasn't the full amount that we were requesting and needed. Is that?
I remember hearing that too.
If you are using the percentage, that's the admin fee percentage, not the housing, the rent.
No, okay. Actually the voucher amount.
The voucher is this. It's a lot.
We've been getting the full voucher amount. We just have not necessarily been getting the full administrative fee.
Yes.
I can compute that.
We do receive 100%, okay, for housing assistance payment. Yes, it's reimbursable. You can consider the housing assistance payment is a reimbursable grant from HUD. It's just the time, when do we get the money. So that's why we are working to ask her to send us in the information. We have this 222 new PVV, because we are sending, communicate, share with her about this information, because her doesn't know. That was approved two or three years ago. Even at that time, we don't know. We kind of can, like AHC property, they can only estimate, say, the property is going to start in leasing up 12 months. But like this new property, it's probably going to take up to a year to really lease it up to our low income, our target tenant. So nobody knows exactly. So we have to communicate that information with her. Yes.
But the reduction that I'm remembering, and I think that Tara is too, is the amount of our administrative fee.
Yes, that's correct.
Based on the administration of our vouchers.
That's correct, because every year HUD posts the administrative fee. They call it administrative fee rate every year nationwide. 2,156 Housing Authority was secondary program. That nationwide, they are about 2,150. housing authority or nonprofit organization managing the Section 8 program. So her post the rate. So in our case, I say make it simple, round it up all the numbers. That's how I say that if we manage, they have one unit, one tenant lease up on the property, 1 month, every month we has, when they submit, basically is, the calculation is this, they submit it to Congress, say, hey, based on the housing authority, they are going to need $100 to manage this one vouchers, 1 month. They send it to, they propose their budget to Congress. Congress come back, say, overall, housing authority, you ask $100, I'm only give you $90.
Yeah,
that's the 90%. That's what you are talking
about. That's what I'm remembering. Yeah.
So that's what based on every year is different based on Congress approved budget. Okay, that's amendment fee, yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks, Barbara.
No problem. So let's go to the next slide. Is that? Okay. I'm kind of reinstate that the what we just went through. So just kind of the overall budget for the 2026, we already talked about the total operating revenue is $784,301,779. Total operating expenses, including the $500,000 transfer to provide fund or operating funding for our red PBI property is $770,843,181. The net reserve net surplus for the 2026 operation is $13,458,598. Like I pointed out earlier, that approximately that $724.735 million are housing assistance payments. So it's a pass-through. We recognize the same amount of the revenue and the expenses. Okay? The next. Then I always like to separate by let the board know that how much we receive from the federal government and how much we receive from non-federal. So this is the federal government, the federal funding provide our housing assistance payment, our amendment fee, and some of the grant, like our family self-sufficiency grant, that over the year, some of the with the other small grants. So overall total that we receive funding from, we estimate to receive funding from the federal government is at $753.18 million for the 2026. Any question? No. Okay.
This may be a question for Mike, who's not here. yeah, this is what is proposed in the way of federal funding.
Yes.
What are we hearing? Because an awful lot of programs that have federal funding approved by Congress, that funding is not coming.
Okay. You probably heard about the federal government continual resolution. The funding has been approved.
Yeah, they did.
For our SHCC hub payment, They are approved. The continue, since it's continued from last year, so means how much we spent last year, pretty much that's it. It's the same thing as the Section 8 assistance housing, the HUB payment item, just the budget items. It's going to be continue to be about the same as 100%. So.
At least right now.
Yes.
Right now, that's what they're saying.
Yes, that's based on what the Congress approved the continual resolution for the current year's budget. So, but we can only do our best based on that. But I mean, yes, there's a lot of uncertainty. We know it's for sure.
Mike, may I ask? I mean, I asked Barbara, and it's she's not really you're the person to ask on this. So we know what has sort of been promised or committed to us for this next fiscal year. What are you, when you go to DC, which you've been several times, is HUD and HUD programs up for the chopping block?
Yes, they are up for the chopping block. There's been a lot of staff that has left or been told to leave. We believe that there'll be a lot of consolidation and change. But interestingly, there has not been much impact yet in what are sort of the traditional public and Indian housing programs. Our public housing programs, our PBRA contracts, those have been renewed without problems. Is that right, Michael? And all of the funding that we would have expected to receive that Congress appropriated has been received in our voucher programs, all of them, the Housing Choice Voucher, as well as all the special purpose voucher programs. Same is true for project-based rental assistance administered by Southwest Housing Compliance Corporation. So all of those contracts so far have held, and we believe that that's because of the, you know, one, litigation risk to the federal government. There's contracts in place saying we will pay you for, you know, 20 years or 40 years for that work. But absolutely, we're very concerned about what cuts could look like. We think that there will be some impacts. While the budget does not include, let's see who's in the room. While the budget does not include things like, you know, a staffing freeze, we in effect have really tried to, we don't have a staffing freeze in place, but or hiring freeze in place, but we're mindful of, you know, of the need to consolidate some things, to hold tight on some staff positions, to stick to core mission things, and to, just like we did during the pandemic, just like we did during the recession, really focus on kind of core mission, making sure we're maximizing and being efficient with the staff that we have and that we meet our needs but don't go beyond that, and try to conserve resources as best we can to make sure we're fulfilling our mission. So we're doing it across those things across the board to just sort of ride out this uncertainty. But right now it seems like we're okay. Speaking of okay, are we okay?
Yeah.
Sorry, there's some stuff going on with the legislature that Ron and I got pulled into by Chairman Ritchie. So I apologize.
That's what
Madam
I was
Chair.
Ask, were you lonely for?
I will say that the continuing resolution that got passed actually included an anomaly in it. So oddly, public housing authorities got a little bit of additional funding this year than they would have expected. Everyone's kind of, you know, excited about the anomaly. What's certain is that it probably won't be there next year. So I should maybe tell you what, you know, we're really fighting for, and I'm, in fact, because I knew you'd have an interest in this. So really fighting for those rental assistance programs, you know, really is the focus of all of the industry groups. We have to maintain those levels of rental assistance. That's really vital. Because otherwise we'll have families that will be hurt. So fully funding our rental assistance programs is our top priority by far. And everyone across the country is feeling it. I don't think, I think it's important to note. So we have shifted just a little bit into shortfall now in our Housing Choice Voucher program. What that means, and that's because of me, because of the commitments we made to our project-based partners for serving persons leaving homelessness. When we make a commitment of, you know, 100 units of housing, and we've made 700 vouchers worth of project-based commitments, when we make the commitment, HUD automatically goes and says, okay, then that's 100 less for you. And they already designate it as though the unit were operational that day. And so even though those units won't come online for in many cases, you know, a year-long period. So we're just a little over in shortfall right now, to the tune of what, Laura, like $5.5 million, I think, something like that, out of an $88 million program.
That a small shortfall.
It's a small shortfall. We've had these
out of 88 million, yeah.
Yeah, out of 84 million or 88 million or whatever it is. And it's because of the roller coaster of, you know, congressional funding. Some years it's more, some years it's less. And, you know, as we ride that out, we have a tool that we use, and HUD uses, called the interestingly named two-year tool. And the two-year tool says we're in shortfall. So as they project 2 years out, we have this deficit. We think that because we think that we can easily ride it out, and we'll
think in 2 years it will even out.
In 2 years it'll even out. But
I'm sorry.
And there's other opportunities as well to go and get funding for shortfall from HUD. So we're looking to apply also. They have actually, HUD knows that agencies have lots of variations. If it makes you feel any better, when I was at CLAFA just 2 weeks ago, my colleague from the Los Angeles Housing Authority, so Lourdes Castro Ramirez, she now heads up the Los Angeles Housing Authority. So her director of her Housing Choice Voucher Program said that they have a $127 million shortfall. So now they have a much bigger program, but still, it's so HUD actually knows that agencies kind of ride this roller coaster, and we've been in shortfall a couple of times before, unfortunately, I've done this to Laura, and it's her, you know, she gets to experience it, you know, 6 months after taking over this position. So, you know, we just have more things we need to work through. But HUD has a set-aside account, and we can apply, and we're going to apply for probably, you know, $6, $7, $8 million, and that will become our new baseline. So instead of an $88 million program, we'll go up to a, you know, $95 million program, hopefully, if we receive those funds. But we'll have more to report to you all in the next couple of months. But budget-wise, right now we feel like we're being very conservative, very careful, honoring every commitment that we've made. But we're not making more commitments. We're going to stay kind of the course and really focus in on programs, making sure that we're doing the best we can. And with the exception, notable exception being Santa Rita, and complete getting that project underway. Mm-hmm. That's going to be a big investment. It's probably, it's probably $10, $12 million from our reserve.
Out of our funding.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, to make it work.
Yep, at least.
Make it happen.
So some of those kinds of things. But beyond that, we're not really looking to do more. We do want to invest in our residents. So I've directed Barbara to increase the amount of the scholarship from $55,000 to $75,000. And we will meet the needs of every student who comes through, who has a scholarship. We haven't turned anybody away.
But I'm liking to see the increase in the budget.
Yes.
I will make an adjustment to that.
Yep.
Thank you.
I want to add, just Mr. Gerber, I want to add that what Mr. Gerber talked about, the $5.8 million, that actually is only just looking into those new lease-up. Starting this year, like the 222 project-based vouchers, and our new increment, the 52 forced use to independence, those that we are going to have, that shortfall of $5.8 million. And I just kind of want to, like I say, there are two calculations, okay? One is based on prior year. One is based on the new need. That's what Mr. Gerber was talking about. I went back and looked at it. Starting in 2011, HUD started to do that in the first year. That HUD, because in the old days, the funding is different. Okay, HUD make the change in 2008, over the financial crisis. So in 2011, HUD made, from that year, every year, HUD provide, they call it set aside shortfall funding. For housing authority, if you have new need, new higher expenses due to the rent increase, the housing market like us in Austin here. Also, because of you have a new unit like we are facing this year. So that in 2011, HUD, the first year they did it, they put aside $100 million. They call set aside funding for shortfall and the new increment, new unit, okay? And every year, the increase up to the past 4 years has been $200 million for the past 4 years. So if the continuing resolution has been approved, if everything is the same, so we anticipate that they are going to continue to have that $200 million set aside
available for housing authority to apply for higher cost or new unit. So we qualify both of two category, two requirements. And everything we managing according to HUD regulation and what they ask us. They gave us a new increment, they want us to lease it. PBB, we made a commitment, HUD allowed and HUD also approved. So I think everything, and the major I share with Laura, I look at it now, we are going to ask for HUD for the set aside funding, the shortfall funding. Another reason is back in February 2024, high increase in the fair market rent in the Austin area by average 18.24%. Yes. So that increase as February 1st, but we don't see the increase on February 1st. It's over the next 12 months because the increase, we can only increase the rent when the tenant, the annual recertification. So if the tenant, we just passed, just finished their recertification, means that we are continued last year, 2024, we continue to pay the lower rent. But this year in January, or the last December, they just redo their recertification in December or in January. They have a 20% increase, means that this new year, we are always going to pay the higher. That's why the higher cost and the new unit is always, they are qualified. They are legit expenses that from HUD for housing authority to apply that HUD says. And I'll be honest, I share with Mr. Kerber, I'm not worried about it. I did it pretty much every other year since they had this come out in 2011. Since 2011, they had this starting at $100 million. So it just kind of design of the program that I call it, and I think that we are very transparent, and we are we do what the direction what allowed. So everything we are very confident. Okay, I'm very confident that we are in compliance. There is nothing. It's not we don't manage our program well. We manage the program very well.
That doesn't seem to matter in this administration, however.
Yes, I
know that we cannot. You all can't. We can't predict.
Yes.
What's going to happen?
Yes.
We have to continue to do our business, as you said, in the most transparent manner, and be as efficient and effective with our money as possible. But even with that said, somebody could say, "Oh, HUD's got $100 million set aside." So this is the way we save money.
Commissioner, I want to share with you in the budget. Like I'm using one particular, the 222 new PVB. That's something we have to honor. Okay. But like the forced use, the independent, like I said, this is a new increment starting this month, 52 units. But actually, we only budget 25 units. We want to be conservative. We're not conservative. We only budget, just let you know, we only budget 25 units. We are not budgeting additional 50.
Amount.
Yes, we are not. We understand. We know. And the stability is the same. Like our new fab, we also do the new fab, 75 units. We all still do 26, like a 2 units per month. We do that. We kind of already discount that and make sure kind of, we don't want to, because they want us to, they ask us to lease it. We want to be sure we do that, but we also want to kind of project it at the minimum. But the fair market rent increased 20%. It was out of our control. That's how HUD studies, the HUD survey. The 222 unit that we have to commit, we have to honor that. Okay, I just kind of, yes, we do. We do look at everything. We do consider about the uncertainty of the federal funding today, these days. We don't know, but we do. We only probably estimate budget those new increment at about 30%. All right? Okay. All right, let's go to the next one.
Carry on our business and...
I
think we want to be careful and cautious, and again, that's why we're looking to conserve, not launch into lots of new things. But live up to our commitments. And the good thing is, again, those ACCs are far more tight and give us a ground for litigation. I think, you know, everyone is ready to sue and to take other action necessary in the event of you know, any upset in this funding. That doesn't mean there aren't weird things that are happening that we have to navigate. But I think in terms of just the budget, you know, I think we're being really cautious and careful. And Barbara's got, you know, a lot of experience, and that's really serving us well as we navigate this. But why don't you go ahead and show the last couple of slides, and then we want to move on. The next one is, like I said,
separate federal funding and non-federal funding. So this slide is show to just kind of show you that we total in the budget, we budget $31.1 million of non-HUD programs and grants. That including our rental income from our tenant, which is our 8 properties that owned by AHC. And our investment income we reduced from last year. It's very low. We owe 2025 more than 10% over that what we budgeted for. This year I adopt the same approach. I budget as the lower because of the interest rate has been declined since last year. So I reduce a little bit, but it's very, very, it's most conservative. So that $2.9 million is very, very conservative. Okay. So the next one is the grant and the donation. That means that our assistant, Austin Pathways, receiving some donation. And also we receive a small grant from the city for our TBI program, which is our assistant housing management. And also we also have a new one for the city's local housing choice voucher program, which is the funding is provided by the city for up to six properties in the city of Austin. Right now we are leasing, there are 3 properties are in operation now as today. So totally up to 6 property is going to be the city approve up to $6 million every year. So, but right now we are still at the very beginning of that program. Like I say, it's very beginning, so very small amount. The final one, I believe the city gave us the projection it will be not until the end of 2026. Okay. Another revenue is a $15.2 million. That's mainly from the AHC, their developer fee, distribution fee, all those kind of fees that from our Austin Pathways. Okay. Any question about this non-federal?
How much money did we get for Austin Pathways on that day of giving? Remember?
This year, I think we got about $35,000. You mean the donation?
Yes.
Yes. This year we got the. It's still subject to change, but it's, right now the last time we heard that we budgeted about $35,000. At that time when we did the budget, prepared the budget.
And truthfully, that number is probably going to decline because the amount of time it takes to do it is so, and Amplify Austin takes a portion of the money, that I think our sense is we'd rather just pay for it ourselves and save a lot of staff hassle.
Yeah.
But I think if we do raise money, one of the things that we've been talking about doing is maybe changing it and maybe we use Amplify to raise money for an eviction prevention program, so maybe we have a ready pool of money to be able to, if someone's behind on their rent, to maybe pay a month or a couple months worth of rent. We're hearing about that maybe as a potential practice. So, yeah.
Okay. This year when we did the budget, it was about a little bit over $35,000. Okay.
Question.
Mm-hmm.
In years past, we've only budgeted 9 months of revenue for
SHCC. I have to admit, this year we did a 12 months.
Did the 12 mm-hmm. months.
We did a 12 months.
Sort of based on what you all are hearing and what you know. And
mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep, and they've told us that we will have these contracts for 12 months. So we felt very confident. Now, the interesting thing is that in January of 2026, the contracts are, that's the end date of the contract, and it'll be quite, there's a real potential issue there about what that might look like. We think that there's no platform for HUD to move to, and we think that we're in a good spot, but there is, you know, that hangs out there, and they're obligated to a 6-month, you know, wind down and a bunch of other things, but these are strange times. So I would say, though, that one thing that we have not done is just in the safety of this room. You know, we took the staff in SACC through, you know, every gyration, you know, every contract extension. You know, we told them everything, every bit of what was going on. And the result was that a lot of people left, and they felt very unsteady. And, it really is taxing to think your work might come to an end, you know, and because a contract hasn't been renewed. And, you know, so now we've taken the view of, we'll share something when there's something to really be worried about. And right now we don't believe, based on Orlando Cabrera and other counsel that we're working with, including Len Goodson, Wolfson, who's our government relations person in D.C. that you all allowed us to hire. We don't think that there's a threat right at the moment, and that something will happen. So we're just going under that assumption. And so, for senior leadership, we do have to start thinking about some of those things and plan for them.
At least for this year, though, or this coming fiscal year, the 12 months, but then next year is when the...
That's right.
But keep in mind...
The funky kind of things can happen.
But keep in mind, when we started this, you know, this program, you know, this wasn't there. that's Ron's program.
Right. So the investment itself.
The reason we built this program was because we knew that at some point this would be able to start to go away. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the problem is we've gotten used to living now on both. And so we need to right size and tighten belts, and so that's some of what we're doing. But we've replaced the revenue and then some.
In reality, as we look at the end of these contracts, SACC at what, January of 2026?
That's the current contract end. But again, they've been extended lots and could be.
I mean,
again,
these properties are 40 and 50 years old. With the HUD requirements are gone. I mean, basically, the HUD requirements are gone. So is there any obligation for us to continue contract compliance?
Well the HUD contract remains in place. They, the contract would gets renewed.
It's not like the old, they got a 20-year mortgage, but you got a 40-year compliance period. That's not the case on these.
Well, I mean, I might ask Michael to come on back down, but
where's Michael?
But you know, HUD renews the contract, assuming that they will extend the terms of that work for that contract period. They'll set aside whatever number of affordable units, live up to the conditions regarding, you know, care of the units and other requirements. And you might want to chime in on this as well. In exchange for that, in exchange for that extension. So, you know, while certain things might have burned off because the property is just old, it's been paid off. Mm-hmm. The conditions of being in the program and receiving government subsidy for setting aside a unit, those remain intact.
So you're saying those conditions never go away?
As long as they're in the program, they don't. No. So we go out there, continue to do inspections. We do, work with residents. We do. And we process payments.
Well, what constitutes being in the program?
And you want to come forward?
Are you talking about Michael's?
Yeah.
Program?
Yeah,
the SACC portfolio.
Why don't you come forward?
They're all under HAP contracts. So the same way that we're under HAP contracts for our PBRA RAD units, all the properties they oversee are under HAP contracts. So all those active HAP contracts are what SHC is, and they're enforcing the provisions of those HAP contracts. So... And generally, over the life of the project-based rental assistance program, which is many decades old now, HUD has renewed those contracts subject to annual appropriations. So could HUD decide not to renew those contracts? Yes. Could an owner decide not to renew a contract? In some cases, yes. But as long as HUD continues to renew the contract, the owner will be held to the provisions of that HAP contract And SHCC will still, there will still be work to be done to enforce those provisions, which is what SHCC does.
And it's one of the, it's one of the biggest funded programs at HUD.
Mm-hmm.
How was it?
After the voucher program, probably.
I would say it's it's many billions, and it's never been touched. It's almost viewed as entitlement funding within the HUD budget in the sense that they know that the contracts are in place and backed by the full faith and credit of the government.
Yeah.
So it's many, many thousands of landlords and others would erupt if there, something happened to that.
Do I remember, like, at some point when we first got these contracts, it was something like 60,000 units?
Mm-hmm.
Is that my memory?
A little more than that. I want to say it's about 80. Texas was, I think, about 60, and then Arkansas was maybe another 12 or 14. It's shrunk just a little bit from where it was the high.
So aren't there some of those units or some of those properties that are no longer in the program?
Yes, owners are allowed to opt out. And Michael would probably have the opt-out statistics at the top of mind. However, the value of those HAP contracts, there's a value to those HAP contracts. And so often when a HAP contract is threatened to opt out, a tax credit investor will come in and scoop it up because they can put 9% tax credits on that property.
But then we're not still involved in the ongoing monitoring, are we?
We are. They'll maintain the HAP contract, maintain the subsidy, and put tax credits on it. And there's a lot of that activity happening. HUD has a new provision in place where you can do a 20-year contract extension and get rent increases to enable an owner to redevelop and put tax credits in place. Okay. And as we know, being able to provide 30% units, which is what a HAP contract really does for an owner, makes it easier to get the 9% credits. So that the value of that HAP contract is something that's recognized and taken advantage of by these developers. So can they opt out? Yes, but Michael could have stats, but I think we're seeing less of that because there's value in these HAP contracts.
There are. I mean, you're seeing a case right now, for example, here at Travis Park. That's a property that's a project-based PBCA property through Southwest Housing. And the owner there has entered into a partnership with L&M, actually. L&M wanted to originally partner potentially with us on that deal, but the ownership there wanted to continue to stay in the ownership. So they partnered with L&M. They're going to continue to be a project-based property, but you can see right now the extensive renovation work that they're doing at that site. The Lady Bird, where Mary is, the RBJ Senior Center, that tower was 200 units, 100 of which were project-based rental assistance. That continues. Those 100 units, you know, endure there, even though the other 100 are something else. So there's been in some ways, that project-based rental assistance continues to be, you know, the sort of the golden ticket for sustaining the property. They can make repairs and improvements at a property knowing that they can that they have that long-term operating subsidy. The other thing that's important, particularly in some communities, is that they also will make vacancy payments at the in the program as well. So if you're in a smaller community and the property is only able to get 75% leased up,
right,
HUD will provide vacancy payments.
Yeah.
That's in contrast to us. We've refused to make vacancy payments to folks. There's plenty of need
here.
There's
no need to pay vacancy, because we've got such a need.
We've had a lot of pressure from folks in the project-based vouchers who have said make vacancy payments like you do in the on the Southwest Housing side, and we've declined. Not only would it throw us more into shortfall, but it would also we can find plenty of people who are
who want a house,
either homeless or at risk of homelessness.
Yeah.
Move them into the program.
I don't mean to derail Barbara and her budget presentation.
No worries. But I will say just want to be respectful of everybody's time.
Yeah.
But,
that's,
so how many more slides you got?
Four. But those are just kind of very quick. Okay?
Let's go.
We already talked about all the major things. So unless you have a question, this is all just additional information. This is just to let you visualize that federal program and non-federal program, that the percentage, the size. So that 96% of our funding are from the federal government. 3-4% is just local, non-federal. Okay, and another one, just kind of break down the detail about the hub that we have more, because that's the huge, biggest of funding the budget items. So $724.3 million, that answer you, that you had a question earlier, that's a $617.2 million is for our SHCC PBIA hub payment, average of a little bit over $50 million a month. And our assistant housing program, including all the increase, the new unit, the new units, everything this year is going to be 107.1. And that including the city, Okay, so that's the overall, that's the hub revenue and expenses. Like I stated earlier, the hub payment is a pass-through, the same amount of revenue and expenses. No question about this, right?
And just to give you a sense of how much it's grown, when I started here, the hub revenue was for SHCC was about $400 million. And the assisted housing HAP program was, I think, below 50. So it's grown pretty dramatically in a little over 12-year period.
So this is for the how we use the, and how we use the non-HAP revenue. Means that all those management admin fee we earn, the management fee we earn, the grant, the developer fee, all those. That as you can see, I break it down the administrative expenses. We total. It's about $26.1 million. And the maintenance, and the pretty much in line, very consistent about what we spent the last year. A little bit decreased from last year because we received a new FSS, the PBIA property FSS grant, so we repurposed, reallocated staff. So a small decrease. But maintenance is about the same. Pretty much our administrative operating, other than hub, we are pretty in line with last year's budget. Okay, and the tenant service funds, including that what we provide funding now for our, like a scholarship, the tenant scholarship is part of our tenant service fund. So overall total, we budget $3.3 million. And the other general expenses is budget at $11.5 million, which is that's probably the only increase in all our different category, because mainly due to the insurance, our property insurance, liability insurance, we got a hit. Okay, and another one is our health insurance, also a 18.4% increase. So that's the $11.5 million. The increase only because of just all from the insurance increase, the insurance premium. So the net income, $13.5 million. And the next one, I just kind of show you every major program. As you can see, the Austin Pathway, and I'm going to increase that the $20,000 for the resident service, the tenant, the scholarship, okay? This is before I have not made the change here yet. So this is from the housing pathway. You can see it's a $2.9 million kind of deficit, but you know we always transfer the money. We always use our the SHCC. They overall, before any donation to different program, they generate $12.3 million surplus. So we use this $12.63 million to subsidize to pay for the funding for Austin Pathways operation, and assistant housing program has a small surplus. So normally they break even, but like you can see, that's their operation, and the Austin affordable housing continue to have about overall that including all the A properties that AHC fully owned, and all the AHC, the fee, the developer fee, distribution fee, all those fees, they end up with $19.1 million in the surplus. And we use the SHCC and the Austin AHC surplus combined to pay for the operating costs for Austin Pathway and the central to support central office expenses. Okay? So as you can, this is last slide. This just tell you the, this is as the fiscal year 2024, when we, the audited report, if you have not, this is based on the final audit note that we carry $68.7.8 million in unrestricted reserve, which that's why we invested, that's why we earned the investment fees, the investment income. So that's end my budget presentation. Any other questions? I'm
it's
sorry.
A lot.
Didn't we have enough?
Thank God we have Barbara. Because it's a really complex budget. Here you go, Nidia. But we think that it's a good balanced budget for this year. We're going to continue to be very sensitive to increased costs. We'll continue to update you, you know, throughout the year. I mean, there's obviously going to be things to worry about. So we'll continue to keep you all apprised. But again, the next big hit that I think you'll see to the budget will be for Santa Rita. And I think there's the potential also of additional insurance costs that might come from, because we've been canceled by our friends at the Travelers Insurance, which does a number of our properties and this building, have said that they're moving on. So
I got canceled by State Farm.
Yeah.
So we're in good company.
It doesn't feel very good.
No, it doesn't.
So,
it's like, what?
Yeah, which means, you know, you can almost be certain that there's going to be an increase in the insurance costs. They see too much risk. So, you know, just things to keep in mind.
You have to go shop around then?
Yes, ma'am. Yep, mm-hmm. Yep, we sure
do. Are you in the process of doing them?
We just found out yesterday or the other day. Yeah, we've been shopping some.
You haven't recovered yet.
Yeah.
Okay.
What were their issues with this building?
No, it was more the fires and some other things we had at some other properties.
Oh,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Not this particular.
Not this building in particular.
Building.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. They should now that the.
Apparently not.
So, Commissioner, yes, yeah, four fires a month. That are. We would recommend approval of Resolution 2887, the operating budget for fiscal year 2026.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Carrington up. Stolen.
Aye.
Aye.
The motion approval budget passes.
Thank you. Those are all the items we have before the board today. There's no need for an executive session. Yes, ma'am.
Congratulations to Barbara and the staff. Because I know how much goes into putting something like this together. So, good job, y'all.
Well done. And we're very fortunate that we have someone of Barbara's skill and ability, you know, navigating this. We talked about shortfall. Barbara brings some real expertise from other experiences that she's had that is married up really well in partnering with Laura. Laura heads that department, but it's been nice to have good thought partnership from finance. Likewise, when we work through issues in AHC and we think and work through various pro formas and think about different transactions, it's great to have a partner in finance. Likewise, when we do the RAD work and have, hit issues and challenges, it's nice to have a strong partner in finance. So to a person, I think on the executive team, we've got some real skills that really, you really call things out and you share, very much with us and it's lifted up the whole agency. So we're really, again, blessed to have Barbara here with us. And again, congrats to your team. There's no need for an executive session today. Couple things I'd like to just mention to you all. One is that we need to plan out the next board meeting, and I know Suzanne has equities about the next board meeting because we have some public notice that we need to get out. That would you worked around it? Great. Then it will not. Worry about any concerns Suzanne might have. just proceed.
Is that like running for third term? You'll work around it.
So
sorry.
In that case, So I've been advised by the chair that he will basically not be here in May. So there's
in May.
So the three of you, that's one of the challenges of having a vacant seat, is that the three of you, you know, will have to carry a little bit more of the burden of the policy setting for the agency. We can stick to the May 15th date, that's the original date, and do it at noon if that works for people. Or I think we've also been talking to you all about May 29th, which was a date that all three of you said could work out. The plan is to not have a meeting in June, but we may need one. If we do a meeting in June, we would need to do it during the last week of June, which would be June 23rd, 24th, 25th, 26th, 27th, and we could make that work. But let's start with May. Would you all prefer to stick to the 15th at noon, or would you all prefer to move it to the 29th?
And we could stick to the 15th. I like the 15th. It's on my calendar already.
Is that okay with you, Commissioner Opstola? Great. We'll stick to the 15th then.
And that would be a 12 o'clock meeting?
We can do it anytime you all like, if you'd like to.
12 o'clock.
Noon. Noon would be great. Yeah. Good. We'll bring lunch. Is that okay for anyone in the room? No issues?
I have one request.
Yeah.
We have to post the admin plan. We have to do the change for approval from the board in May. We've been waiting for the date to post.
Uh-huh.
So we need to make sure it's 45 days from the decision. Is it still 45 days?
No, it's not going to be 45 days.
Yeah, I think we're going to have to.
Today's the 3rd.
I'm sorry, the delay in posting is just waiting for the date for the May board meeting.
I got 42 for the 15th.
Yeah, it's 42. That's what I got through. So we didn't have to do it after May. Is what you're saying?
May. It's 45 for the annual plan, right?
And, okay.
Because the annual plan has to be posted along with it. It's 30 for the admin plan, but the annual plan has to be posted with it. So it's Kelly.
Okay.
Sorry for that inconvenience.
I knew somebody had a... Mm-hmm. Okay.
What was it?
The CMAP usually goes to the board in June.
Okay.
Yeah. I think it's June.
May.
Okay.
Could we relook at that May 29th date?
Sure. The later will be better.
Works for me.
Could we do May 29th? How about we could do it at noon? We don't have to do it at 8 in the morning.
Yeah. I appreciate 29th. That. Thank you.
Okay. So May 29th at 12 noon.
At noon.
Okay.
Okay.
May 29th, 12 noon. Okay.
And no June board meeting?
Not unless we do it that last week. We'll have a better picture of that in the next couple of days. I think and then we'll return to our normal board schedule, which I think is July 17th, is on the board agenda, is on the board schedule. What?
July
17th.
17th.
July 17th.
Right.
July 17th.
Thursday.
Which is a Thursday. Yeah, we're just trying to work around a bunch of different things. And then, of course, if a new board member gets appointed, which I don't think will happen before the end of the legislative session, but if a new board member gets appointed, our hope would be that maybe they'd be in place by July or August. At the latest.
I'll be remote in July, but I can be there.
Okay.
Which means I can't chair anything, right?
Correct. And since you have five different...
I'm sorry?
And since you have five different chairmanships, we'll have to...
I have a vice chair, don't I?
You do, Commissioner Apostolo.
Apostolo.
So we'll be...
I'm going with you.
But it'll be tricky because you do have to have a quorum of the board here in person. Carl will be here. Presumably, yes. Yes.
Well, I definitely will not be. So,
but in May, we'll have all three of you here. And that began
yes.
on the 29th. So we'll be in good stead for the 29th, and then we'll go from there.
And is the quorum based off of 4 or 5?
I think it's based off 5.
It's based off of seats, not filling seats?
I think it's based off of, yeah. I think. But I'd welcome
to. Please, tell the mayor to get busy.
Yeah.
Or suggest, not tell him anything,
but suggest. By Zoom.
We can't do the whole meeting by Zoom anymore. We can't do it by state law. So.
Can't do what?
By state law, you can't do a meeting by Zoom. During the pandemic, we could.
We had a waiver or something.
Yeah, the governor had an order in place that allowed that. But now
that was during the pandemic.
Correct.
Yeah.
So now they've tightened up and they want everybody in person. They actually want a quorum in person. And during the, if you're on video, they actually want, during votes and everything, they want to make sure that people are visible and you have to affirmatively say, yes, yeah. I vote for
they
that.
They want to see you on the camera.
And yeah. So it's better. I mean, I think the interaction's better if we're all together, right?
Yeah, I don't have any issue with that.
Yeah. So, but we may be able to work through it in July. So we'll keep in touch about calendars. I don't know what Carl's schedule is going to look like or if there's a special session, but we'll figure it out. So give us a couple of weeks to work with you all to identify dates.
There will be a special session.
And yeah. I will put this out for July later in the month. I'm probably going to be back.
Okay. The back on by the 21st, that week of the 21st?
Well, that would be the TAP conference, and so who knows, maybe, but mm-hmm. at least the latter part of the month I will be back.
Oh. Yeah, and I hope we're planning a development opening.
Yeah. On that. Hope what?
I said I think we're planning a development opening that during the TAP conference potentially. So we'll keep everybody posted. So give us a couple of we have a little bit of time.
You're just gonna need
but we now know we've got May 29th at 12 noon, and this is not atypical for us. Because of the nature of both Carl and Chuck's work, during legislative sessions, we've always met at some weird times, and there's been longer stretches between, but generally we want to get back on that monthly. We'll get back to that monthly cadence.
Also remember we take vacation sometime during the summer,
mm-hmm.
and I would like to be able to make some plans.
Absolutely.
Because if we go to the end of the July, then I'm not going to make the August meeting. It's one or the other.
Got it. We'll reach out to each of you, and we'll get a sense of your schedules and know when you're planning to be away.
Well, and I think part of this is going to depend on if we do have the fifth commissioner. I mean, if we have the fifth commissioner, if one of us is absent, then
you don't worry about it so much.
Yeah.
It's just right now it's a little bit of a pinch.
Yeah.
Mostly because Carl, not able to be here. So that's just making May. Well, I mean, we've got the three of you, and we'll make it work. So.
Will it be done by July, Carl?
Oh yeah, it should be done by the very beginning of June.
At the end of
June.
First of May, first of June.
You don't have a special session.
If there's no special sessions.
Session.
Yeah.
Whatever.
If we don't get vouchers passed, are we going to have another special session?
So the governor says.
We could always meet on Sundays.
That was probably some prohibition.
We can meet on Saturdays. We can meet on Saturday as long as we're posted. And we, I think we've tried to be respectful of people's, weekends and such. I know that would probably be difficult for Carl, but I think we can work through things if we need to. Yeah, I think the Thursday cadence has worked out pretty well for us. But different people are in different spots, based on, other commitments they've made or work commitments or, other things they enjoy. So we're set at least for May 29th. And again, I'll reach out to all of you over the next week and we'll nail down some other dates. I don't think there's anything else to come before the board. Yes, ma'am.
You had mentioned the Housing Works Conference on April.
Oh, yes.
The 11th.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
I would like to attend.
Great. We'll mark you down.
Which conference is it?
Housing Works. That's the local Austin, all the
Yes.
So high-level folks in Austin who deal with housing issues.
Yeah, Housing Works is a wonderful group. Professor Way is no longer active in it, but she used to be part of it. Aves Azar, who comes and has presented to us on, he's the executive director of Housing Works. So, and he sits on the Planning Commission and a variety of other things. But Housing Works was founded about 20 years ago. I chaired for a few years. And it brings together folks from every part of the continuum in Austin. You have people who work in the homeless space. You've got people who are, you know, large developers and the board, head of the Board of Realtors and the head of the Apartment Association. You've got a broad array of players, and they all think about housing policy and recommendations for council. And they talk about, you know, how things are going sort of district by district, and they prepare a lot of analyses. Now they've taken to thinking more about the region as a whole because, you know, people really struggle sometimes with Austin. And so I think there's a real focus now on regionalization happening at the chamber and in other quarters, including in the housing policy space. And so this year's conference, in the past it's been on housing and healthcare, housing on job training, housing and other things. This year's on housing and regional and regionalism. And
recording stopped.
And trying to think about broader region-wide collaborations. So it should be a really interesting session. It'll go from 8 in the morning to, you know, till 5 o'clock when there'll be a reception. Nitti will send out the agenda to all of you, and all of you are welcome to come, but if you would let us know by close of business tomorrow. I know Edwina would like to go. Well, it's next week.
It's a week from Friday.
Yeah, so we need to get them names. But would you like to go?
Next Friday, a week from tomorrow.
Here in Austin?
Yeah, it'll be at the, I think it's at the Hyatt Regency, isn't it? Nidia?
I'm looking right now, yes.
I think it's at the Hyatt Regency, so.
Okay.
Yeah, so if you'd like to go, let us know.
Yeah, just let me know and I'll register you.
Yeah, and Nidia will follow up with each of you to see if you'd like to go. But it's not everybody's cup of tea. It's a lot of data. It's a lot of, this year the keynote speaker is former HUD Secretary Julian Castro. So he'll be speaking. I'm not sure what time, but he'll be speaking. I'm introducing Mayor Watson because my role in life seems to be to go to things and introduce Mayor Watson. I'm doing Housing Works, and then I'm doing introducing him at Mayfest. So this is my season to introduce Mayor Watson. So yeah. Okay, I think that's all we've got. Commissioners, we would suggest that we adjourn, and then if any of you left to take a quick tour of what's going on the second floor, we'd be glad to show it to you and then get you out the door for lunch.
I would.
Great. So, and did I also detect that was a motion to adjourn?
Yes.
Carrington moves
to adjourn.
Adjourn
the meeting, whatever today is, the Housing Authority of the City of Austin.
Aye, so
Mary?
So seconds.
Tara?
I thought I was still chairing, so.
Yes, ma'am.
That's right, you are.
All those in favor of adjournment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion passes. We are now officially adjourned.
At 11:59.
At 11:59.
So good morning to all.